top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is our family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's at 9 minutes before eight, just before I go to our next conversation. The total amount of student debt, student loans, is £267 billion. So the idea is, some of you said, why doesn't the government write it off? No government could write off £267 billion. That's the size of the problem they're dealing with. And we'll come back to that in a moment. But another problem, of course, is homelessness. So there's new initiatives started now to try and tackle it. They say head on and deliver on the national target to halve long-term rough sleeping by the end of this parliament. So homelessness, of course, not necessarily rough sleeping if you're homeless. You could be sofa surfing. But let's get more details from someone who's at the very heart of this. Local Government and Homelessness Minister Alison McGovern joins us now. Good to have you on, Minister. So what is it that you and your colleagues are putting forward today? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Well, this morning we're putting forward two new funds. So £50 million over 3 years for local authorities to help them innovate and do different things to help rough sleepers, and also £37 million for voluntary and community organisations. And the reason for that is that we all remember during the pandemic when the government had the Everyone In initiative, and I was on the opposition, but I supported them because you needed to put a roof over people's heads. The problem that we've got now is that we can see people sleeping rough long term, often for complicated reasons, addictions, debt, mental health challenges. So I want to help local authorities do things differently and really help get to the heart of those problems with people.
In what way would you hope the money is spent? What do you hope it might provide for, Minister?
So I hope that it's going to be spent on staff who can work with an individual, help them get the kind of addiction support that they need. Just to give one example, say somebody's been sleeping rough for a long time because they can't break out of that cycle of addiction. You need a person to be with that member of our society to help them get to the right NHS support or addiction support, deal with what can often be a Byzantine housing system to work your way through, somebody who can help make sure that that person, when they do move into a home, they're able to keep up that tenancy because they're keeping up with their addiction support, and hopefully even move into a job, which might seem like a dream for some people, but that complicated process needs a person to help them. And that's, you know, I hope that local authorities will be able to spend this money alongside the money we've already given them to get the right systems in place to give that help. And then on the voluntary community sector side, like, we know that the government is not always the most trusted organisation. We just have to be honest about that. But the good thing is there's a lot of charities and community organisations out there who can help us. So if we can back them with this money, I think they can also find ways to support people.
I mean, this is quite a lot of money we're talking about. £50 million in one fund, Minister, £37 million in another fund. How will we know if it's working?
We'll know when it's working if we can meet our targets across this parliament that we've set ourselves. So the homelessness strategy, which I published in December, set a new goal to halve long-term rough sleeping over the course of the parliament. And we have this annual count of rough sleepers. We have the data to know if we've been able to meet that. The other target that's really, really important is the prevention goal. So we record how many people present themselves to their council to say, I am at risk of being homeless. And we'll be able to tell of those people who present themselves, how many people local authorities are able to stop, in fact, becoming homeless, and that's what we want to do.
What is the estimated number of homeless people in the country at the moment, Minister?
So if we measure the number of people who are presenting themselves to local authorities, then it's about 80,000, just under 80,000. And
80,000 homeless across the whole of the United Kingdom?
That's for England.
That's OK. Do we know we don't know the UK figure. And of that homeless, how many are rough sleeping?
So rough sleepers, we've got about 4,500. And that has gone up quite a lot.
I mean, your number of 80,000, Minister, is in stark contrast to what Shelter say. Do you want to revise that number?
So Shelter say a broader look. You can measure homelessness, as you were saying before, in different ways, because you can find people who are sofa surfing and other things who don't actually report themselves.
So what would that number get to then, if we include the sofa surfers, as it were?
I mean, you can give Shelter's number. I'm just giving the government's measure of how.
What is the Shelter number?
I don't know off the top of my head, because there's...
Sorry, just to clarify, you are the Minister for Homelessness, and you don't know how many people are homeless, according to Shelter.
Honestly, Nick, you and I have this all the time, where I understand why you challenge me on knowing the numbers, and I try to be across my brief, but I don't know the latest Shelter figure off the top of my head.
Why not?
Because I focus on the government...
So you're tackling... I mean, I find it intriguing, Minister. You, very valiantly, you and your colleagues want to solve this crisis, and you don't have an idea how big the crisis is.
No, that's not true. I think the crisis is really big.
Well, the crisis is considerably bigger than 80,000. Shelter, as recently as December of last year, said 382,000 people are homeless in England, not the United Kingdom. So I don't know where your figure of 80,000 comes from, Minister.
That is the people who councils owe a homeless duty to, and... it doesn't surprise me that Shelter can come up with a bigger figure. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to think broadly about homelessness, and that's why I say our goal is to increase prevention.
Well, I hope it works, obviously, because although we've come out of a brutal winter and the weather is improving, it's a very tough life there. Can I ask you a final question on another matter, if I may, Minister? Kemi Badenoch is suggesting that, not you, but all your colleagues, are part of a pedo defenders political party. Minister, how do you respond to that language?
I think it's not good. I think yesterday in the House of Commons, when she used that language, I think there were lots of people on all sides of the House of Commons that felt that that's not good. You know, we've seen this, you know, I would say we've seen this across all parties, where we need to remember that we as politicians are responsible for the words we say, and that we can debate issues in a very serious, robust, and forthright way without using the language that's going to be inflammatory and make the whole situation of the challenge we're facing in communities much worse.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Alison McGovern, Minister for Local Government and Homelessness, talking about those two initiatives jointly. £87 million to be spent over a number of years to try and ease that crisis. Thank you for your time. Coming up after the news.
Welsh politicians back assisted dying on the NHS, but there are serious concerns about the shape of the bill. I'm LBC's Mike Hughes at the Senedd in Cardiff.
Plus, we now know who grassed up Petey.
I'd like to confirm that upon receipt of information that I felt it was relevant, I passed this on to the Metropolitan Police in good faith, as is my duty and responsibility.
Plus, never mind love your neighbour, snitch on your neighbour, as a record number of people dob people in for not having their TV licence. Would you... I don't know how you'd find out, by the way. Would you snitch on your neighbour if he, she, they did not have the TV tax or TV licence? It's after the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the Conservative leader has been accused of degrading politics after claiming Labour is being called a pedo defenders party. A row has broken out after an exchange between Kemi Badenoch and Sir Keir Starmer at Prime Minister's Questions yesterday. Labour MPs have reportedly complained that the phrase has been shouted at them following the Peter Mandelson-Jeffrey Epstein saga. But Kemi Badenoch has told LBC that she won't apologise for merely pointing out a fact.
What people are doing now is trying to use the cover of language to excuse the fact that people are very angry with them. I'm merely reflecting that people are saying this. I'm not calling them pedo defenders. I'm merely saying that even they are saying they're being called that.
Peter Mandelson has always denied he had prior knowledge of Jeffrey Epstein's sex crimes during their friendship. Separately, the Metropolitan Police has apologised to the Commons Speaker for sharing a tip-off he gave them about Peter Mandelson. Sir Lindsay Hoyle has admitted that he told the force he'd heard the peer could be a flight risk, which led to his arrest. He was detained on Monday on suspicion of misconduct in public office. Lord Mandelson has dismissed the flight claim as baseless and denied any wrongdoing. An interim report has found NHS maternity services in England are failing women and babies. Racism, staffing and a lack of kindness and compassion are among the issues highlighted. Baroness Amos's final recommendations are due to be published in the spring. Families at risk of losing their homes and volunteers supporting rough sleepers are to get a share of £37 million. The government is setting out its funding plans for the homelessness strategy. Minister for Local Government and Homelessness Alison McGovern has just admitted to Nick that she doesn't know the latest homelessness figures compiled by the charity Shelter.
I mean, you can give Shelter's number. I'm just giving the government's measure of how...
What is the Shelter number?
I don't know off the top of my head, because there's...
Sorry, just to clarify, you are the Minister for Homelessness, and you don't know how many people are homeless, according to Shelter.
Nick, you and I have this all the time, where I understand why you challenge me on knowing the numbers, and I try to be across my brief, but I don't know the latest Shelter figure off the top of my head.
And polls are open in the Gorton and Denton by-election in Greater Manchester. It was triggered by the resignation of MP Andrew Gwynne. Polling stations close at 10 o'clock tonight. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 10,806 after closing up 125 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather. Early rain will move across Scotland and into large parts of England and Wales. The southeast of England will remain dry, though, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
We all want to get ahead, right? So why not grab the unstoppable Samsung Galaxy S26 on EE, the UK's best network. You can trade in your old device and save. It has got serious processing power. Plus, you can get 512 gigabytes for the price of 256. Pre-order the Samsung Galaxy S26 on EE. Offer ends 10th of March.
Eligibility, credit check and terms apply. Credit by EE Limited. Verify best network at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after eight on Thursday, February the 26th. Coming up, the very thorny and complex debate over assisted dying, as you heard just before the news. It moves very, very close in Wales. There are debates going on elsewhere within the United Kingdom. So where are we nationally? Indeed, where should we be nationally? In other news, never mind love your neighbour, snitch on your neighbour, dob them in. A record number of people reporting those for not having a TV licence. I find that about a bit sinister. It is absolutely none of my business whether my neighbour does or does not have a TV licence. But would you dob in? Would you snitch on your neighbour? Plus the national crisis of fly tipping. Rachel Hallos is from the NFU, the National Farmers Union.
The reality is that there's so many unreported incidents as well. So fly tipping really is the blight of the countryside.
Unreported, but also at record levels. Plus, we will come back to our conversation about student loans. So many of you want to say. And remember the figure I gave you, or if you're just joining us because the alarm went 4 minutes ago at 8 o'clock, £267 billion. That's the total sum of debt. God, it's enough to drive you to drink.
It's a whiskey drink. Time. Yes.
Yeah, basically, we find any excuse we can to play that because we enjoy it so much. But someone who could drive you to drink and then drive you home. What an initiative from a pub landlord who, to make sure that his pub survives, drives you home afterwards until a killjoy council told him he was breaking the rules. You'll find out more later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I was reading one of the newspapers the other day, and suddenly I discovered that in Wales, and we'll have a report in just a moment, in Wales they are moving very much closer to the idea of assisted dying being provided on the NHS, a key vote taking place in the Senate earlier this week. And it reminded me, we did a lot of work on that on this show last year. Do you remember some of the moving testimony we heard? Conversations with Dame Esther Ranson. Do you remember conversations with John? Remember John, the economics lecturer who lived up near York? He decided he was, having listened to the show, and we made him our economics commentator a few times because he was suffering with it. Unfortunately, and the last conversation we had was just before he boarded the plane to Zurich. Do you remember that? So we're deep into this story and we can't let it go. It really is, when it comes to all the political debates and free-for-all, this is one where I believe, and credit to all the politicians involved and all the party leaders, they have allowed every single person to be driven by their conscience. So there's no Conservative whip, there's no Labour whip. It's, you must vote, you must act the way you feel is right. And of course, so often, it's informed by personal circumstances. If you've watched your mother decline or whatever it might be, whatever it might be. So to Wales. Politicians have backed implementing the Assisted Dying Bill, which, as I say, could move now to providing that on the Welsh NHS. It avoids a constitutional headache for Sir Keir Starmer's government that would have seen terminally ill people from Wales possibly travel to England to end their life. But there are serious concerns about the contents of that bill. Many have questioned whether the issue should be handled entirely by the Senate to decide. LBC's reporter Mike Hughes has filed this report.
Regardless of the way Tuesday's vote went here at the Senedd in Cardiff, should the Assisted Dying Bill pass in Westminster, then it will become law here in Wales. Criminal law, which underpins the bill, isn't devolved here like it is in Scotland and Northern Ireland. But health is. And the question before members was, should the state, namely the NHS in Wales, help someone end their life?
This is a debate where I know that everyone is moved by compassion. My argument, though, is that we must also think about those people who are not surrounded by love.
We need to ensure that Welsh NHS is able to accommodate the tiny number of people who wish to take this choice.
What debate on morality can take place when we say to people in Wales, you can exercise a choice, but only if you've got the money to pay for it?
The state's priority, in my view, should be to support people at the end of their lives, to alleviate suffering, not state-sanctioned provision for a citizen to end their life.
The motion passed 28 votes to 23. Had it been rejected, those seeking an assisted death would have needed a private provider, or they would have had to travel to England. The Health Secretary here, Jeremy Miles, urged members to vote for the motion. Otherwise, he said, Welsh ministers would struggle to oversee or regulate assisted dying services here. He then went on to vote against the motion, as did the First Minister.
Look, I recognise that the decision lies in Westminster. I have a personal conscience issue in relation to this. I know there are safeguards, and also we don't actually know what the final version of the bill will look like.
It was a free vote, but ultimately it's all a bit messy, and it raises the question, should the Parliament here in Cardiff Bay have control over the matter?
That depends on the quality of the people in power, really, and you know, how could it could be a good thing in terms of accountability.
I think absolutely Wales should be able to decide, you know, what is best for Wales.
I think it is frustrating because we have just as much equal rights as everyone else in the country, so we should have as equal a part in voting.
Some have questioned the timing of the vote, with an election only around the corner, which could ultimately see the political complexion of this place completely change in just a few weeks' time. Either way, the bill now continues its passage through Parliament as politicians here wait to see its final form.
LBC's Mike Hughes reporting to Kim Leadbeater, who's Labour MP and leading the campaign for legalised assisted dying in England and Wales. Good to have you on again, Kim. I trust you and the family are all well. Just update my listeners, if you would. Where are we with the progress or lack thereof of this bill? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Lovely to speak to you, and thank you for your very sensitive framing of what is a really important issue.
Not at all.
So the bill in the House of Commons in Westminster passed its full stages and got to third reading last year, and it is now in the House of Lords where it's facing further scrutiny. And as you've said in the piece that you've got this morning, we've also had what's called a legislative consent motion, which has passed in the Senedd in Wales, which means that the devolution agreement is respected and the Welsh Government have powers to implement the aspects from a health perspective that would apply to Wales. The frustrating thing from my point of view is that the bill is stuck in the House of Lords where it is facing, quite rightly, scrutiny and suggestions of refinements to the bill. But sadly, we have also seen a small number of peers who are, you know, clearly trying to talk the bill out, trying to prevent its passage through Parliament before the end of the parliamentary session. So that is very frustrating from my point of view. It's very upsetting for the families and the people who've campaigned on this issue for many decades to give a very small number of people, people who are terminally ill within the last few months of their lives, the choice, the dignity and the compassion of having an assisted death. So I'm really urging colleagues in the House of Lords to do their job, do it, of course, and do it thoroughly in a robust manner, but to also ensure that the bill passes through Parliament in this session so that it can then receive royal assent.
Kim, you use the language, talk the bill out. Explain to my listeners what that means. Is there effectively an expiry date on this?
Yeah, there is. I mean, the House of Lords is a really interesting place. I mean, as is Parliament overall, there are a lot of very traditional mechanisms and ways of doing things, some of which make sense and some of which, if I'm honest, don't seem to make a huge amount of sense. But because the House of Lords is a self-regulating house, a self-regulating chamber, there are no limits on when the debate has to come to an end. And because of that, it means that peers can make repeated speeches making the same point, and they don't actually end up voting on things. So it could potentially fall, which is the expression that gets used, before the end of the parliamentary session, which we anticipate it'll be sort of April, May time. And what that would mean is the bill then would sort of disappear. So we would have to find a way to bring that bill back, and there is a way of doing that. And we would do that in the next session. But I would urge the colleagues in the House of Lords to do their job. Of course, I've always said on this issue, which I know is deeply sensitive, that we need proper, robust debate. We need scrutiny. And that's what the House of Lords does brilliantly. And there's some extremely talented experts in the House of Lords. But also we have a duty to send that bill back to the House of Commons, the elected chamber, where MPs really wrestled with this issue. And as you've quite rightly said, it is very sensitive with a range of views. But they took it really seriously and it did pass through the Commons. You know, and the House of Lords now should be sending it back to the Commons to go through those final stages, make those final refinements so the bill can then go on and give terminally ill people, of whom I spend a lot of time with, and families who've experienced the failings of the status quo, the inequity of the fact that some people can go to Dignitas in Switzerland to have this choice, which is traumatic in its own way. The fact that people are suffering, sadly, with even with very good palliative care at the end of their lives. And the fact that we have several hundred people who are terminally ill taking their own lives every year because of the fear and the desperation that they feel. So as legislators, we have a duty to fix a failing status quo. And I think, you know, we have a duty to ensure this bill passes through all its stages.
Kim, thanks for your time and thanks for all the background. Kim Leadbeater, Labour MP, leading the campaign to legalise assisted dying. Should we speak to someone in the other place in the House of Lords? Claire, now Baroness Fox, is a non-affiliated life peer, director and founder of the Academy of Ideas think tank, and has been an outspoken critic of some of this legislation, or much of this legislation. Might I ask you, Baroness Fox, just to remind my listeners, what is it that you have problems with? Good morning to you.
Good morning. There's quite a range of things which I have problems with, but I think it's very important to say that those of us in the House of Lords who may have in principle been opposed to the bill have been joined by people who support the bill's principle but have thought that it's very badly drafted, leaves open a wide range of loopholes that would mean that potentially, for example, adults with Down syndrome who are terminally ill could have assisted dying, but the interview process where they would be on their own, highly suggestible sometimes and so on, would not necessarily be free and autonomous in their decision making. And also it means completely renewing what the NHS is, what a doctor is. The first do no harm, the whole arguments around what we provide on the health service would change, and we have to also amend the Suicide Act. So I think that this is a hugely important moral discussion and issue. And I was kind of bemused about the talking out bit, because actually I've sat through all of the debates in the House of Lords, and I can honestly say that there's been some fantastically important, insightful speeches from all sides. I've also sat through filibustering in the House of Lords, and this isn't one time where it's filibustering. I mean, it really is people genuinely trying to get to grips with, should we make this absolutely huge change, yes, in which doctors would hand somebody lethal drugs to take their own lives?
Well, I think
that
speaks to the gravity of the issues that you and your colleagues are wrestling with.
Indeed,
I wouldn't be crass to suggest, oh, you're a betting woman, but do you imagine it will or it will not go through the deadline that Kim Leadbeater just sold my listeners? Baroness.
It doesn't look to me as though we would reach the deadline, but I think it's just important to note that one of the problems with this, it's a private members' bill, and as a consequence of which, we're confined to only discussing it in non-government time, which is on Fridays.
Right.
So, and also, you know, because there's this sort of idea, well, can't you all get together, all of you who are speaking with reservations about this bill, and make decisions? But we're not all a group. I mean, there's conservative peers, there's non-affiliated like me, there's lots of crossbench, you know, ex-Royal College of Psychiatry leaders, all sorts of people like that.
Yes.
And so, actually, we don't all agree amongst ourselves about what our reservations are, but there's no one to whip us or organise us, and them's the rules. my view is that if Keir Starmer promised Esther Hanson, or if there's so much importance attached to this bill, then it should be given as a government bill, or there should be a royal commission or something of that nature. Because
yes,
the way that this is being done, and I think morally kind of blackmailing us by saying, you will be defeating the House of Commons and that's a democratic. I mean, many of the MPs that voted it through at the final stages in the Commons said, we're doing this with reservations, but we expect that the Lords will sort it out. And that's what we're trying to do, and now we keep getting shouted at.
All right, I'll let you go on with the sorting out possibly tomorrow. Thanks so much for your time, Claire Baroness-Foxley, Director and Founder of the Academy of Ideas. Your reaction to that idea, we're a little bit late to the news, coming up after this. 8:17 LBC News headlines, then. Dominic Ellis.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has been accused of degrading politics after claiming Labour is being called a pedo defenders party. A damning interim report has found NHS maternity services in England are failing women and babies. And polling stations are open in the Gorton and Denton by-election in Greater Manchester. LBC weather. Early rain moving across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales. The southeast of England remaining dry. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne, where one lane stays closed on the M25 anti-clockwise just after junction 28 at the A12. It's because of the emergency works which are still taking place, and there are delays from junction 30 at the A13. Also, the problems continue in Sydenham. The Kent House Road is closed both ways following an accident, and on the North Circular Road, the eastbound entry slip road from Waterworks Corners had to be closed, and that's following an accident. Now, big problems on the trains. Gatwick Express services are completely suspended, and no Great Western Railway services between Gatwick Airport and Redhill. It's because of a track problem, which also means that Southern and Thameslink services are severely disrupted via Gatwick Airport.
This is LBC.
At Tesco Mobile, club card prices are frozen, so your contract price stays on ice. Get the iPhone 17 with 12 gigs of data and an iPad, all for just £45.99 a month for 36 months with club card prices, saving you £126. And it stays like that for the length of your contract. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. Ends 22nd of March. Club card and 36-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
All right, Mr.
assistant, sir. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself. Hi, Clampy. How's it going? Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely. Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:21, let's come to your calls concerning assisted dying. Very, obviously, it is the gravity of the issue speaks for itself, but which way would you vote? Antonia, in Purley, you're the first up. Good morning.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Not at all, thank you for calling me.
I'm personally concerned about taking such a move as legalising assisted suicide, but I just wanted to make the point that we need to look around and see who is opposed to this piece of legislation. The Royal College of Psychiatrists, the Royal College of Physicians, the Royal College of Pathologists have got concerns about it. When the bill was first introduced, the government's chief suicide prevention officer had profound concerns about how legalising assisted suicide for people who are terminally ill, what impact would that have on suicide around the country. So that when all these professional bodies who will be most nearly affected by such a change in the law are expressing the gravest concerns about this piece of legislation, the bill itself, I think that's an important point to note. And if I may, I would also say that, you know, there's not one disability group in the country that supports this piece of legislation.
Well, you can say that respectfully, Antonia. I don't know.
I think I can.
Sorry to talk over you. Every disability group in the country opposes this, did you say?
Is opposed to assisted suicide. That's what I've read, and I think it's I think it's true.
Antonio, and you put your case brilliantly, but if I wind it back a little bit,
Go on.
Do you support the idea?
No, I don't, and I'll tell you why. Because I've got a friend in hospital who's very, very ill with cancer. I've got a friend who's dying from motor neuron disease. My friend's husband has got Parkinson's disease and is severely disabled with that. And, you know, obviously these are people that I love very much, but I know that they don't want to die. And I think the burden of them choosing to die and then what the family has to live with after. But more than that, I think, you know, surely we should be looking at palliative care. Surely we should be striving to push the boundaries.
Just a couple of things, Tony, Antonia, and then I'll bring you back in. Of course, it's assisted dying, so perhaps the language assisted suicide is a little colourful. Let me read you that this has just come in from David. My 95-year-old grandmother slowly drowned over the course of months as her lungs gradually filled with fluid. Nothing the doctors could do. I don't know that she would have taken the option to end her suffering sooner, but she was fully cognizant to the end. I find it horrifying that she did not even have the choice. Why shouldn't that lady have had the choice?
Well, I just think that there are some choices that we've got to be very careful about.
No one's suggesting we wouldn't be careful, Antonia.
Well, I think you've got to look to Canada, and I think you've got to look to Australia, places where assisted suicide has been legalised.
Assisted dying it is, of course.
No, well, can I just say that I think what we're doing is we're helping...
You can say, but I mean, I have the responsibility to say what the legislation is actually called, because I do have to correct, but go ahead,
Okay, that's what the bill is saying. Yeah. So, of course, you know, I mean, of course, my heart goes out to that person who's witnessed that with his
grandmother.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, you know, and I'm not saying that my friends aren't suffering enormously, but, you know...
Suffering continue? If I got to a position, God forbid, where effectively I'm of old age, I'm lying in bed, I'm soiling myself, my sons or whoever, my wife now, is looking after me, I have no quality of life, but I'm completely switched on mentally, well, why can't I take... I can do it with a cat or a dog or a rabbit, why can't I do it with myself?
Well, I mean, it's interesting he said that in the message that he's not sure that his grandmother would have taken that choice.
Just have the choice. Yeah.
Yeah, but I just animals are different from human beings, and I just think my point I really want to make, Nick, is that my fear is that the people will have assisted suicide who didn't make that choice. Assisted dying who didn't make that choice.
How?
That there were people because they feel pressured into ending their lives, because they feel their lives are a burden, because they feel that they don't want to impose any further on their family.
And the checks and balances that the MP has explained, I'm not doing this in a challenging way, I'm asking, you don't think they're strong enough?
No, I don't. And okay. And I think we can see how weak this bill is because of the number of peers in the House of Lords who are scrutinising this, who are going through it, who are throwing up all the problems, all the pitfalls.
Really enjoyed our conversation, Antonia. Thank you. I'm only finishing with you because others want to get involved. And indeed, we have other stories to cover. More calls on that in November. It's 8:26. So, front page news this morning. The Met, as in the Metropolitan Police, have apologised to Commons Speaker Lindsay Hoyle for accidentally revealing he was the source of a tip-off that Peter Mandelson supposedly planned to flee the UK. Of course, some suggestion that he and his legal team strongly, strongly deny. Here is the Speaker of the House yesterday, Sir Lindsay Hoyle.
Members will be aware of comments in the media regarding the arrest of Lord Mandelson. To prevent any inaccurate speculation, I'd like to confirm that upon receipt of information that I felt it was relevant, I passed this on to the Metropolitan Police in good faith, as is my duty and responsibility. It is regrettable this rapidly ended in the media, as this is a live investigation. Members will understand that it would not be appropriate to make any further comment, and I'd like to caution members from doing so.
Sir Lindsay Hoyle yesterday to Hamish Brown, who's a former Met Police Detective Inspector with over 30 years' service. Hamish, you'll know that a journalist never gives up his or her sources. This story has more twists and turns than Hampton Court maze. What's gone wrong here? Good morning.
Well, good morning to you, Nick. And yes, it has gone wrong. And it's the overriding principle when people give information to the police, and it might be something pretty low-key, but at the same time, there's a top-end risk as well, armed robberies and major drug dealings and all that sort of thing. Whatever the situation is, it is confidential, full stop, and people giving that information must have absolute confidence that it will be dealt with in confidence. In the more serious cases, it could lead to reprisals and even very serious injuries, if not death.
Hamish, what does this say about the competence of the detective investigating this case, that they spilled the beans about their source?
No, it just shouldn't have got out, come what may. I don't know the circumstances. It was, I don't know if it's a slip of the tongue, but it was quite wrong. I say the public must have confidence, and the police weighing up information they get, who is the person involved? My goodness, you've got a pillar of society here, and what is the quality of the information? To be fair to the police, they did check that bit out with the person who told the Speaker, so they've covered that bit, but what they haven't done is kept their mouths shut, and this is of paramount importance, and they have apologised. I'm pleased they have done that, and I don't know. I don't like the term lessons learnt. They were wrong. They've accepted it, and I suppose if there's retribution, so be it, but we've got to move on.
Hamish Brown is a former Met Police Detective Inspector. Thanks for your input on that. how on earth, the Speaker, giving the information because he was in the BVI, British Virgin Islands, I don't know, did a man in a pub tell him or something? I have no idea. And then the police move on. Surely the answer there is, you contact Peter Mandelson through his solicitor, and you say, we're hearing that, Peter Mandelson, can you just confirm he's not going? Or, can we have Lord Mandelson's passport, please? And if he doesn't want to give it up, all right, you're nicked. You don't need to arrive at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And of course, the other thing is, remember this. You have 24 hours to interview someone in a case such as this, not implying any guilt whatsoever, 24 hours prior to charge. You've just spent 10 hours of your 24 hours gone because you didn't do it through a solicitor. You could have gone to the solicitor, said, hello, we're hearing this. I'm not going to tell you who's telling us, but we're hearing that your client, well, that's utter nonsense. Fine, can we have his passport? No, you can't. All right, he's nicked. Can we have his passport? Yes, of course you can. He's not leaving the country. He's got his husband here. He's got his family here. No, of course he's not leaving the country. Great, thanks very much indeed. Boom, there. Instead of which, I have to say, the bungling plods have just lost 10 of their 24 hours to question the man. This is a story that keeps on giving, doesn't it, in every which way? Coming up after the news.
Like many things, the student loan system is broken. We are doing things like bringing back maintenance grants. Is there more to do? Of course there is.
Sounding as sure-footed as ever there, Chancellor Rachel Reeves getting ready possibly for a change on student loans. I think it's unfair to characterise this as a U-turn because this was an inherited policy, but we will come back to that debate and continue talking about assisted dying too. It's 8:31, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC The News. Dominic Ellis.
A row has broken out after Kemi Badenoch refused to apologise for claiming Labour is being called a paedo defenders party. The Tory leader has been accused of degrading politics, but Mrs. Badenoch has told LBC she won't say sorry for pointing out a fact. Polls are open in the Gorton and Denton by-election in Greater Manchester. The contest was triggered by the resignation of MP Andrew Gwynne. And the Homelessness Minister has defended not knowing the latest figures collected by one of the UK's leading homelessness charities. Alison McGovern has told Nick that she's not across Shelter's data because she's responsible for knowing the latest government figures. LBC weather, early rain moving across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales, dry and bright in the southeast of England, a high of 13 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
As much as it is great to give a spotlight and space for people with Tourette's syndrome, you've got to be so careful about what goes on the telly or the radio as a result of doing that, haven't you? I don't think you can therefore say that you are celebrating as a broadcast in whole that individual. So the BBC is going to have upset absolutely everybody.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in store or see three.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data, 2H 2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
The Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear all change, please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Get your own UK-based account manager, a Beekeeper, for support with Pension Bee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC.
Call 0345 6060973.
8:35, come back to our conversation, Jean, on the assisted dying and the progress or lack of progress in Parliament. Let's just pick up on what you're saying. This one comes in from Sandra. I've spoken about this before. I want the choice of being able to choose how I live or die. I cared for my husband with vascular dementia for 5 years until he died. It was a difficult time. We discussed this choice to die when his own mother also had dementia and just existed. While sitting with her, he and I both said to each other, don't let me get like this. Effectively, we both knew we would want the opportunity to choose to die. Let this bill pass. I will add a codicil to my will to insist I can go to Dignitas if I become unable to enjoy life. Antonia, the earlier caller, if you're still listening, Hannah says your caller, Antonia's made me quite angry. Of course people should have the choice. If they're in so much pain, which leads to the inevitable anyway, it's up to them. Jean's in Bushy. Jean, what would you say to this? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nick.
Hello.
Hello. On the 28th, I'm going to be 94, and I want the choice. I don't want my family to have to go through how we watched my husband die in inches. I think, and I'll know when it's time, I'm sure I will, and I want to be able to say, please do not keep me alive. I don't want to live.
Is it distressing if I asked you, and please don't answer, you don't, you said watching your husband die. Might I ask you share some of that, Jean, or is it too upsetting?
No, I can speak about this.
What did you witness?
Well, he literally died in inches. He was ill. There was no hope ever of him recovering at all. And he literally, from this giant of a man, turned into a skeleton. And it was horrific.
Over how long a period, Jean?
Oh, it was about at least 3 years.
There is no measure for this, as I often say, but how distressing was it for you and your family?
Very distressing, obviously. I cannot understand. I know. I would like to keep pills. I would willingly give it to myself. I'm going to be 94 in a couple. In fact,
I know. I mean, I have to say, you sound, I mean, I'm not even in my night. You sound so bright. I mean, you've got years and years to go, for goodness sake.
Well, yes, I know, but I went through a very bad healthcare of myself.
I'm sorry.
But I did come out of it. But I do think, I can't see the point of the resources going into a person who there's no hope for.
Lastly, Jean, I sense no one could bully you into anything, but there is a sense that people who are perhaps not as robust or frail, that they could be bullied into ending their life. Would that be a concern?
Yes, that would be. There has to be definite...
caveats or caveat. Safeguards. Yeah, caveats.
But I'm only 23. I was really born on the 29th of February.
When you said that, I was thinking you were leaving, and I was trying to do the maths. You're ahead of me. Enjoy your 23rd birthday. Jean, gosh, I sense there are many, many, many more birthdays for you, and thanks for your input on that. Tom's in Geneva. Now, I stress Geneva because Geneva's in Switzerland. Of course, Switzerland, they have a different policy anyway. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Hi.
What can
yes,
you tell me?
I'm talking about another institution in Geneva called Exit. That's in Geneva, not Zurich. It's the same idea, though.
I think Dignitas is in Zurich, isn't it, as I recall?
Yeah, Tom. Dignitas is Zurich, Exit's in Geneva to serve the Swiss Roman, the French-speaking.
Yes.
I have a British friend and a Swiss friend have both used their services in the past few years.
Yes.
The British friend had serious lung cancer. He was a heavy smoker when he was younger. We worked together at CERN.
Oh, right.
And my Swiss friend was suffering from motor neuron disease, so both horrible, nasty illnesses.
What are the caveats, the safeguards in place in Switzerland, Tom? What do you have to do to satisfy a doctor or doctors?
Two doctors.
Two doctors have to examine
and no
you.
No interference from the state. It's just up to you. And to be a part of Exit, you pay 30 Swiss francs a year to be a member, if you like, mm-hmm. which is the price of a plat du jour these days.
Right.
And most of my Swiss friends have signed up. My children haven't, but they will. They're in their 30s.
Have you?
The wife has, yeah.
Have you signed up, sir?
No, I haven't, but I probably will do.
And do you have to, I recall from doing some work journalistically with Dignitas, have to show that you're both healthy and in sound mind to sign up with Dignitas?
Absolutely.
Same with Exit, is it?
Yes.
And when you see what's... are you British born? Because you have tremendous...
Oh, yeah. I was brought up in Newcastle, ended up in Ponteland in Northumberland.
Okay, so when you see the debate going on here, living as you do now in Switzerland,
yes.
Are you puzzled? Are you concerned? Are you anxious? How do you regard what's happening here in the UK?
Horrified. Why an unelected body can be putting a delay on a bill made by that wonderful lady had on Kim Leadbeater, and they're delaying it just to stop it going through. When I tell my Swiss friends that we have a second house which is unelected and there's 1,000 of them, they find it very hard to believe.
And lastly, you know, how common is it that you might be, as you say, having a plat du jour and someone says, oh, by the way, next week, Grandma's going to go to Exit, or Grandma's going to go to Dignitas. Does it sort of enter conversation much?
We have conversations about it, but I only know two people who've used this service. Yeah.
As you say earlier, have a good day in Geneva. Thank you for that. Louis, I think it's cruel to let a person die and fall apart from cancer. Euthanasia is a doorway to peace. You wonder why some people want you to suffer. I would want to die, should I be in that situation. Chris is in Barton Le Clay. Chris, your take on this. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Hope you're well.
Yeah, not bad. Thank you, sir. Go ahead.
So, yeah, as everybody says, first-time caller and everything.
Oh, great. No, not everyone says that. So it's great to have you. How long have you been listening, Chris?
Probably in the last couple of years now. Brilliant. On my way to and from work. It's brilliant listening to you guys.
Thank you.
So, short story, my old man, he died from motor neurons disease last year. And from what I understand, a lot of people have been mentioning motor neurons disease because it is such a degenerative disease. You know, watching my old man, you know, just wither away. You know, I think it was your previous caller to the guy who was in Geneva. She was saying, you know, watching her husband, you know, giant of a man, that really resonated with me. Same sort of thing, you know, he was always playing with his motorbikes, always on his motorbikes, and, you know, watching him do less and less and less over it, like, until finally, you know, he just passed away in his armchair. Thankfully, he was with my mum at home. Me and my sister couldn't get there in time, unfortunately, but he died in the place where he wanted to die, with the person he probably wanted to end it with.
Do you understand the opposition? What do you take from the opposition, Chris?
I totally understand it could be abused. I don't think there's any policy that's ever been rolled out which has been perfect the first time. There's always going to be mess-ups. There's always going to be something that's going to slip through the net. I totally understand that. But hearing people, a couple of callers ago, she was saying assisted suicide.
I know.
It's nothing like assisted suicide.
It's quite actually informative to look at the journalists have failed here. We call it assisted dying, which is a shorthand, really. It's actually the terminally ill adults, brackets, end of life, closed brackets bill. I'm going to read that again. The terminally ill adults, open brackets, end of life, closed brackets bill. That tells you a lot about the sentiment behind it, doesn't it, Chris?
Absolutely. And trying to brand it as something else, like assisted suicide, it's just going to really upset a lot of people, you know, because my dad, he wasn't in a position to do anything himself, you know. So anybody who's thinking, oh, you know, they're just going to pass these guys drugs, you know, crack on, do it at home, not a problem, see you when you die, sort of thing. It's obviously not going to be the case whatsoever. It's obviously going to be done, you know, in palliative care. Obviously, nobody really knows how it's going to go until hopefully it does pass through. But, yeah, I'm fully for it. I know my dad, we had discussion about it. You know, he said to us, I wish it would just end.
Yes.
You know, he suffered with it for 2 years.
Yes.
And if my dad said, I know people have, you know, done sort of prison time for taking families and loved ones to Switzerland, I would happily do 20 years for my dad. To take him to Switzerland, if he asked me to, 100%.
Thanks for finding this radio station. Thanks for being a first-time caller, first-time, first-class Chris. Thank you. Best wishes to all. Get it off your chest, get it on the radio, just like Chris just did. Let's go to these texts. Scott in West Hampstead, I'm a Christian. I believe in the sanctity of life, but I cannot understand the mentality of those who believe it's not right to allow people a choice to end their own lives and not die in agony. We would not allow a terminally ill beloved pet to die in this way. Kathleen in Bromley, I'm a Canadian living in the UK. I personally know three people who took the assisted dying route in Canada. They were terminally ill, in hospital and suffering, and took the decision they'd had enough. Their deaths were peaceful, surrounded by their families. I wholly support this bill, and I pray I'll be afforded the choice if I need it in future. Thank you for that. I'll just give you that, because, again, I've fallen into the trap, and it's because journalists, you know, we have to sort of shorten things down. Assisted dying bill. It's not. It's the terminally ill adults end-of-life bill. That probably speaks to the sentiment behind it all, doesn't it? We'll take more calls on that. Plus, after the news.
Masked men wielding machetes raided a jewellery shop in North London as locals tried in vain to fight them off. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma in Haringey with the story.
Plus, what do you think of it so far? As Morecambe and Wise used to say, rubbish. And a record amount of rubbish is being dumped in the country. And it's an absolute headache.
The reality is that there's so many unreported incidents as well. So fly tipping really is the blight of the countryside.
Rachel Hallis is from the NFU, the National Farmers Union. That's in the next hour. It's 8:45 now. LBC News headlines. And Dominic Ellis.
A row has broken out after Kemi Badenoch has refused to apologise for claiming Labour is being called a paedo defenders party. A damning interim report has found NHS maternity services in England are failing women and babies. And speaking to Nick, the homelessness minister has defended not knowing the latest figures collected by one of the UK's leading homelessness charities. LBC weather. Early rain moving across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales. Dry and bright in the southeast of England. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 30 at the A13 to just after 28 at the A12. Those emergency works are still taking place. Very busy on the M3 northbound to the M25 junction. There was a load of debris across the road earlier. It's now been cleared, but it's still very slow. In Sydenham, Kent House Road remains closed both ways after an accident. On the North Circular Road, the westbound entry slip road from Waterworks Corner is closed, and that's following an accident. So that's causing lengthy delays on all approaches to the roundabout. On the trains, because of this ongoing track problem, Gatwick Express services aren't running at all. Great Western Railway services are disrupted as well. They can't run between the airport and Redhill.
This is LBC.
I need a smoke. Fancy one, Dave. Dave? Why is lightning shooting out of your phone?
Introducing the free NHS Quit Smoking app. From craving support to a savings predictor, the power to quit is in your hands.
A smoke, you say?
No thanks, Pete. I've saved £250 this month.
Fair play.
Download the free NHS Quit Smoking app today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look. That one's the plough.
Shooting star. Wow.
Made it. Last train back. Feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop has a story.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
I'm Natasha. I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming up on 10 minutes before 9 now. If you're listening in the first hour, you heard we attempted to give you full details, and we're going to pull it off now, about sadly another raid in broad daylight on a jeweller's. This particularly was a gold shop, and you'll recall that we already told you here on LBC how the soaring number of thefts is because of the soaring price of gold and silver and other precious metals. The latest incident was at a Turkish gold shop in Haringey, and LBC Shivani Sharma hopefully joins us from, it might have opened by now, actually, joins us from outside that store. Shivani, good morning.
Nick, good morning. It's not open just yet, but as you say, this is the second brazen attack we've seen on a jewellery shop in London in recent weeks. Bilezik is a Turkish jewellery shop in Haringey, a vibrant, busy area of North London. And yesterday, its shutters were down all day. The shop was closed. The business was reeling after two masked men dressed in black, wielding machetes, raided the store here in broad daylight at 10 o'clock on Tuesday, while two others waited outside on motorbikes preparing for their getaway. Now you can hear sounds in the background there, Nick, like someone is wailing as social media footage captured locals trying to fight off the attackers using brooms, saws, bottles. In fact, at one point, one of the attackers is seen struggling to get away on the back of a motorbike as locals were throwing things in his direction. But they did eventually manage to make their escape with two bags full of jewellery. And I've spoken to a local jeweller on this very same road, another Turkish jeweller's only a few metres away. Now, she doesn't want her shop to be named, but she says that while she didn't see what happened yesterday, she heard screams and loud noises coming from outside.
It took me aback a bit, you know, obviously the motorbike being inside the store, the way they just charged in. It wasn't something that we were expecting. I mean, right now, sort of the latest news with jewellers as it is, we are quite wary and we are sort of on the edge and trying to be as careful as we can.
Are you more nervous now? Are you having to take extra precautions? Because what have you seen?
Definitely. You know, we've had to go through some protocols again. We've discussed, you know, how we let people in and buzz them in, not letting people stand in between the doors. So it's definitely been an eye-opener for all of us to sort of make sure those steps are in place to make sure our employees, and our businesses are safe.
Now, she also told me that those masked men clearly didn't realise that the shop they stole from sells gold-plated jewellery, not fully gold jewellery, so their stolen goods might not be worth as much as they might have thought. Now, as I say, Nick, the shutters are down again today. I'm not sure if the shop will open later on. No arrests have been made at this stage. Officers say they're working quickly to try and secure evidence and identify suspects. But as I say, this is another example of an attack on a jewellery shop in London in broad daylight, with shopkeepers and locals trying unsuccessfully to do everything they can to stop it.
Shivani Sharma reporting for LBC. If you're able to, go to the LBC app, go to the LBC app or the LBC website. The video is extraordinary. I don't quite understand it. So one guy's on a moped or a motorbike fighting off some of the locals. Then his accomplice, who's obviously done the robbery, tries to get on the motorbike. It won't come off the stand. So another motorbike pulls up to take him away with whatever he's stolen. And then everyone starts fighting in the street. It's extraordinary. Just remind you, of course, as you watch that video on the LBC app or lbc.co.uk, remember, Sir Mark Rowley says that London now, crime is diminishing, as does the Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan. No crime in London. Fantastic spot. We'll check that out in Haringey. 6 before 9 is the time. Ruth in Harrow. We're talking about this terminally ill, end-of-life bill. Your reaction? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning.
I just wanted to call in about my dad. He was diagnosed with Alzheimer's about 9 years ago.
Right.
It's now advanced. We had to move in into a care home just over 2 years ago.
Oh,
he can't speak, he can't communicate, he can't really do anything for himself. And I know that if you would have asked him 10 years ago, would he want to live like this, he would 100% say no. Mm. And it's obviously, it's very difficult for all the family to watch him like this as well.
So this is what I'm going to say. Those who campaign against the idea of this would say, we need better palliative care for your father. That's where this has gone wrong. How would you respond?
Well, the situation where he is now, he's obviously unable to make that decision for himself. So, I mean, that's a difficult one. They, you know, at what point do people make that decision?
But they would say, we're not providing your dad with enough care. There should be better care, better facilities for your dad, is what they would say. That's why you should not have the, or go down the route of assisted dying, is what they would say.
They would, yes, yes.
And what would you say back to them?
I'd say that maybe to go and visit a care home and see what is happening there day to day, and the people and the conditions and what their health is like, and they might take a different view.
Had this legislation been in place prior to your father's deterioration, do you think you would have gone down that route?
I think that if my dad could have made the decision not to live like this, then he would have done.
Do you get any sense of how long your poor father might have to continue with this?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because obviously his mind has, you know, more or less completely gone. But physically, whilst he's not great, he's not terrible either. So I really don't know how long this will carry on for.
Again, as I often say, there is no measure for this, but how much distress and upset is it causing with you and the rest of your family?
It's causing a lot of distress, and obviously my mum visits him regularly, and every time you have to go and see a partner who is like that, it is just awful. It really is. And it's not the care home itself. They're doing their best to look after him.
Of course.
But it's just a very, very distressing situation.
Of course it is. Best wishes to him, to you, the rest of your family, Ruth. I am sorry. Thank you for your input, though. There's another call, Elizabeth in Romsey. Who are we talking about, Elizabeth? Someone in your life, is it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, it was my husband, who had dementia.
Right.
I cared for him at home for 5 years until the very last month. To pick up from what was just said by your last caller about care, the care and support for dementia just isn't out there. My husband had a heart attack, which is what brought on the vascular dementia, and then he subsequently had Alzheimer's as well. It would have been kind of him had he died when he'd had the heart attack, with what subsequently followed.
What did follow?
Well, he was a lawyer. Were his life.
Yeah, right bloke.
It got to the point where he couldn't put a sentence together. He deteriorated. You lose the person so long before they die. He as a person was gone long before he died. And this is the cruel thing. You know, so I phoned him because I really say I support the fact that people should have that choice, and that choice should be made, because to watch somebody you love,
you lose them twice.
Yeah. And as I say, picking up from what your last caller said also, there's a whole other huge issue about the lack of care and support and understanding of dementia. My husband had to go into hospital a couple of times with something physical. One time I went in to see him, I heard him before I reached him. He was naked, howling on the floor under a chair. Everyone was getting on with everything else. They didn't have the time or the understanding for him. A lot of the medical profession actually don't themselves understand dementia. I could go on for hours.
The trauma and the stress, but
I feel it's so important that this bill goes through and people have the choice. And I certainly have it in place for myself. I live in fear of ending up like that.
Elizabeth, thank you. I'm sorry you've had to share the very graphic details of what your husband went through. And again, yours is very powerful testimony to this. For me, of course there have to be caveats. Of course there have to be safeguards. And I think they're all in place. It would seem so obvious, but as the MP, Kim Leadbeater, was telling us, they could talk it out, effectively. We'll have to see how that progresses. We're going to progress, and after the news, we're going to come to an avalanche of fly tipping and the impact on local areas. William Westercott is a farmer from Maidenhead.
It's a continuous problem, which as soon as you've cleared up one episode, within a couple of weeks, you're having to deal with the next episode. We're not able to get on with other day-to-day jobs on the farm.
Plus, would you telly on your neighbour for not having a...
If you're watching television without a licence, you're looking at a £400 fine. Don't break the law. Get a licence.
Yes, a record number of people dob or snitch on their neighbours for not having a TV licence. I've no idea how they would know, but... Would you snitch on your neighbour? Would you telly on them? It's after the 9 o'clock news here on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, a row has broken out after the Conservative leader refused to apologise for claiming Labour is being called a paedo defenders party. It follows an exchange between Kemi Badenoch and Sir Keir Starmer at Prime Minister's Questions yesterday. Labour MPs have reportedly complained that the phrase has been shouted at them following the Peter Mandelson-Jeffrey Epstein saga. Speaking to LBC last night, Mrs. Badenoch moved to justify why she repeated it.
I'm merely reflecting that people are saying this. I'm not calling them pedo defenders. I'm merely saying that even they are saying they're being called that, and saying that the language I'm using is disgusting when I'm just merely pointing out a fact. This is shroud waving.
Labour MPs have told LBC that the remarks degrade politics. Peter Mandelson has always denied he had prior knowledge of Jeffrey Epstein's sex crimes during their friendship. An interim report has found NHS maternity services in England are failing women and babies. Racism, staffing and a lack of kindness and compassion are among the issues highlighted. Baroness Amos's final recommendations are due to be published in the spring. The government has outlined how £50 million in extra funding will be used to help tackle homelessness. It's part of plans to halve rough sleeping by the end of this parliament. Local authorities will be given money to support people with struggles such as mental health complications and addiction. Homelessness Minister Alison McGovern has told Nick they're determined to tackle the issue.
I hope that it's going to be spent on staff who can work with an individual, help them get the kind of addiction support that they need. Just to give one example, say somebody's been sleeping rough for a long time because they can't break out of that cycle of addiction. You need a person to be with that member of our society to help them get to the right NHS support, deal with what can often be a Byzantine housing system to work your way through.
Security alerts are being recorded at Britain's nuclear submarine base every 3 days. LBC has learned 10 times as many reports were flagged at Fastlane last year than before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The Ministry of Defence has declined to disclose the nature of the alerts, but says it flags every activity. And voters are going to the polls in the Gorton and Denton by-election in Greater Manchester. The contest was triggered by the resignation of MP Andrew Gwynn. Polling stations close at 10 o'clock tonight. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 13 at £10,819. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather. Early rain will move across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales. The southeast of England will remain dry, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tesco Finest Alderwood Smoked Bacon, the foundation for the ultimate bacon butty. It's why only the finest bacon is traditionally hand-cured with Cornish sea salt, delicately smoked over Alderwood, and matured for at least 19 days. Layer it between slices of crusty bread and savour its richer flavour. All you have to think about is brown sauce or red. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Warned you 3 minutes after nine on Thursday, February the 26th, buried under an avalanche of rubbish. What a load of rubbish, the country. It's a tsunami of waste, but what is to be done? Plus, would you telly on your neighbour? Would you tell on your neighbour if they didn't have a TV licence? It's being reported that a record number of people have, but I don't know how they found that out, or is it just another scare tactic? And with the hospitality sector, particularly the pub sector, with such crisis, remember, one was apparently closing one every week last year, to the publican who's come up with a novel idea to try and drive a business on.
It's a whiskey drink.
At my funeral, I just so much. I'll get rid of Rugged Cross and we'll have Chumbawamba. Tub thumping. Yes, but the local council, despite that initiative to keep people in work and to keep his business thriving, has said he can't do it. Which is the council and why?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Don't go out into the countryside as much as I used to, because, as I think I've shared with you, lost my mum quite a few years ago. She did live in the Kent countryside, so I used to go out there quite a lot and drive to see... Well, I used to go every day to see mum, towards the end. And even those years ago, I'm afraid, the village in which I grew up, sadly, there was a lot of fly-tipping that went on. But as you may be aware, I live in London, and most of my life is spent in London, so I don't get out as much as I should. But I would imagine Kent, like the rest of the country, is still probably suffering. This is, as is reported, the country is being buried under a tsunami of waste. Councils are dealing with nearly 1.3 million fly-tipping incidents, as they're called. That's 9% up on last year. Farming and anti-litter groups said prosecutions and penalties for criminals need to increase. The number of court fines issued to criminals fell by 9%. Oh, hello, there's that number again. So fly-tipping up 9%, prosecutions down 9%. The government's saying all the right things. Fly tippers should have their vehicles crushed. Have you actually seen that? Has anyone actually ever said to you, you're not going to believe what happened? You know that guy who's been driving around, that battered old... Oh, yeah, yeah. They took his hand. They crushed the van. No. Yeah, they did. No, me neither. Mary Cray, the nature minister, says offenders should not be surprised if their cars end up on the scrap heap. Do you think that's really happening? John Reed is founder and managing director of Clean Up Britain and joins me now. Are we getting messier or are we not putting enough people through the courts? Which do you think it is, Mr. Reed? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, it's both. Yeah, I mean, certainly there's a lot of people doing more fly tipping, there's no doubt about it. But one of the reasons is because we just don't have strong enough deterrence in this country to deter people from fly tipping. And the government's response yesterday was a little bit lame, I'm afraid to say. It's they're sort of talking semi-tough, but they need to get tough. And that's what Clean Up Britain is all about. We're putting forward a seven-point manifesto for change, which is involves increasing fines, better hidden surveillance cameras to actually catch people. We're saying also there's a big problem with the Sentencing Council, who guide courts as to the sort of sentences they should impose. That needs to be looked at. And also, crucially, we're saying the government needs to look at banning cash payments for waste collection. That would be a game changer.
You talk about the Sentencing Council. Is another aspect the local councils, in that in some instances, not all, I understand no longer can you go to your local amenity recycling centre, or as I'm going to call it, a tip. You actually have to book an appointment, and then in some instances you're charged per tyre or bath panel or shower tray or whatever it might be. Is that a problem, Mr. Reid?
I think it's exaggerated slightly, that problem. I mean, yes, there are hangovers from COVID when people had to book spaces, but actually, you know, you can often, in most cases, go to your local household waste recycling centre, as they're known, and you can...
Oh, can you turn up? I thought you had to book an appointment. You can just turn up sort of ad hoc, can you, and say, hi, I'm here, and I want to get rid of this broken bath or something.
To be honest, Nick, it varies across the country, but my local one, there are no restrictions whatsoever. The local ones around me in the West Midlands are like that as well. Yeah, I know it does alter slightly, and there are some that require you to book an appointment. I don't know if that's the biggest ordeal that anyone's had to face in their life. I'm not sure it is. But, you know, there's no excuse. At the end of the day, there is no excuse for people badly behaving and being antisocial and lazy and just dumping their stuff in the countryside. It's a criminal offence. They need to be deterred, and they need to be, if they do that, they need to be fined and punished seriously.
You mentioned criminal offence. Do we have any sense of the degree of criminality that's involved here?
At the top end of the sort of fly tipping spectrum, yeah, there is serious organised crime involved. There's no doubt about that. I was told a few years ago by quite a senior Met officer that, you know, serious organised crime now, this is waste crime is the third most lucrative crime for these sort of...
What would that be after drugs and vehicle crime, motor crime? Is that right?
That's what he said to me. Now, whether or not that's still true. So it's a serious issue. They can make £25,000 a night. Some people are doing this, there's no doubt. But also there's a lot of people with their white van going around the country, just going past people's front gardens, seeing stuff discarded there, knocking on the door saying, look, give me £300, I'll take all that stuff away from you. The headache's gone.
Lastly, there is a process that people should go through. You should make sure, and I'm terribly sorry, it's been a long time, but in fact, I normally get a skip, to be honest with you, but they should have a licence, actually, to take your waste away, shouldn't they?
They should have a waste carrier's licence. Waste carrier's licence. And that's been too easy for people to obtain in the past. It's been a very, very sort of perfunctory sort of document and process you have to go through. That's been strengthened, so that's something. But these are just technical things. The things that will make a difference is increased fines. We're saying fines should be increased to 500%. From £1,000 to £5,000, people should get 6 points on their licence if they are caught fly tipping. And at the top end, where you're talking about serious organised crime, you know, it's a minimum £20,000 fine, up to unlimited fines. A guy was fined this week, £1.2 million. Yeah, we're starting to talk there.
We are starting to talk. That's a tidy sum. John Reid, thank you. Your founder and managing director of Clean Up Britain. Listening to that is Gavin Lane, who's president of the Country Land and Business Association. So who is it you and your colleagues actually represent then in that association? Good morning to you.
Good morning. 26,000 rural-based businesses in England and Wales. So everything from quite small campsites through to very large farms and estates.
And what's the impact on your members?
I mean, it's pretty dreadful at the moment. I think it's, you know, as your last caller said, it's pretty epidemic now. We see, as you said, 1.3 million cases, reported cases. That's not including the unreported cases. That's 25 fly tipping incidents per square mile in England alone. I mean, it's gone absolutely mad in the last 4 to 5 years, and it is organised crime that's fueling this.
Your response to the ideas put forward by my previous contributor, John Reid, Mr. Lane?
I totally agree with what he's saying. I mean, the average fine, I think, is about £530. The prosecutions are about 0.1% of all of the incidents. We've only seen 13 custodial sentences. We've only seen 139 cars seized in the last year. I mean, we need to up our game on this completely.
Do you think that is the message? It's to the courts now that we have to turn, would you say?
Totally. I mean, they can disqualify people from driving. They can take the cars away. There are a lot of other things that they can do to make it much, much more difficult for people to carry on doing this.
Lastly, the farmers, as if they don't have it rough enough at the moment, and I've been a supporter of the campaigns that they've been trying to do, this must have a devastating impact. If you've got a farm and someone decides to drop the contents of about half a dozen bathrooms, it falls to you to clear it up, I suppose, does it?
Yeah, you have to pay to clear it up. And we are seeing more and more people having to deal with this almost on a daily basis now. It's ludicrous. It just needs to be stopped.
Grateful for your time. Gavin Lane, president of the Country Land and Business Association. Let's get your voices on the radio. That's what we're about in the morning. Matt's in Birmingham. What have you seen, Matt? Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Hello,
yeah,
sir.
So obviously you've got your old traditional ways of, like, they get pull up in a van, chuck your stuff out the van, and that's the old traditional way.
Yeah.
But what you're seeing now as a lorry driver, down the A38, I think they've moved a couple of the trailers, but they're purchasing...
Sorry, where's the A38? Sorry, sir, I don't know which...
We've done Sutton Coalfield towards
Sutton Coalfield,
Derby.
Yep, okay, yeah, go on, yep.
They're buying old trailers, and they're filling trailers full of rubbish, and they're just dropping the trailers in these lay-bys, and they're just leaving the trailers. So it's cheaper to fill them. Yeah, seriously, Nick. And the big retail company trailers, which have been decommissioned, have been brought and they've been used. No word of lie. If you go down these highways,
So these are like the big things that Sainsbury's and Tesco and everybody, they all take their goods around it. And that would take tons of bloody rubbish, wouldn't it, Matt?
Yeah, the amount of money they're earning off these. But also, Nick, for builders, so I've got a couple of mates. what they do, they've got their own compound, they dump the stuff in the compound, they separate it, but then what they're having to do is take it as a household, because the council's charge, they don't float it, they've got their own compound, they dump it in there, and then they sort, and then they take it as if it's their own household waste, so they can take it free. The councils need to stop charging builders. They don't. This is where the issue comes. They're charging the builders, because obviously it's a business. I know they're earning from the business, but at the end of the day, if they want to sort the problem out, stop cashing in on the builders.
Safe driving. Gosh, I hadn't thought of that. I've seen a couple of those trailers ill-parked in Labour. I just thought the tractor had gone, you know, the front part of the truck, I don't know, gone off to get some gas. I don't know what it had gone to get some petrol. I don't know. More calls on this. Graham in Harrow. 6 months ago, I popped down to the Harrow Council Recycling Centre. I hadn't booked in advance, but it was just a few cardboard boxes. I thought I'd chance it. I got to the facility. It was empty. I asked at the gate to see if I could drop the boxes off, but I was refused. I explained it was empty. It's just a few boxes in the back of my car. I got turned away and told I was better off dumping them on the corner of the road a few streets away, because the council will then come and collect them. Mark says North Wiltshire Council are planning on closing down two recycling centres at Compton Bassett near Calne and Purton, leaving large areas without recycling options. Rachel in Bexley says, Nick, you were right. You do have to book to go to, you say, our local recycling. I imagine that's Bexley, I don't know. Our local recycling centre. If you turn up without a booking, they simply turn you away. What is the reality if you've seen it? And they did start. There was a charge sheet, which we'll get for you, where it was like £5 for a tyre or £2 for a shower tray or something like that. They actually charge you per item. Let's see if we can dig that out and share that with you as well after the news. When we'll also be asking you, would you telly on your neighbour for not having a telly licence? More on that after this. 9:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
An interim report has found NHS maternity services in England are failing women and babies. The Conservative leader has been accused of degrading politics after claiming Labour is being called a paedo defenders party. And the government is outlining how £50 million in extra funding will be used to tackle homelessness. LBC weather, early rain moving across Scotland into England and Wales. Drier in the southeast, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 30 at the A13 to 28 at the A12, where those barrier repair works are still taking place. There are delays on that stretch of at least half an hour. Very busy on the A12 heading northbound up to junction 18 at Danbury. There's some debris across the road, and also slow on the A13 westbound to the M25 junction following an accident. In Sydenham, Kent House Road remains closed both ways after an accident, and on the North Circular Road, the westbound entry Road from Waterworks Corner remains closed. On the trains, Gatwick Express, Great Western Railway, Southern and Thameslink all still delayed via Gatwick Airport after that track problem from earlier.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in store or see 3.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla speed test intelligence data 2H 2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Yeah, we're just getting that list of what some local authorities charge if you want to dump a tyre or whatever it might be. While I get that into my hands, Nat in St Albans. Nat, just out in Hertfordshire. What happens out there then, Nat? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Good morning.
Hello, sir.
I'll tell you what, fly tipping really is a pain in my heart.
Right.
I live in a little village just outside St Albans.
What's the name of the village?
Chiswell Green.
Chiswell Green.
Yeah.
It's got a pub there called the Flying Hammers or the Five Hammers or something, doesn't it?
They have indeed, but I don't drink, so I've never been in there.
I know Chiswell Green. On you go, sir.
Oh, well, I live in a little country lane, and when the houses come to an end and we get into woodland, not a day would pass when I don't see some rubbish dumped there. And I'm talking big heaps of rubbish. And I think I know what the problem is. I mean, I listen to these councillors talking about catching vans and crushing them and fines. We've got a local tip, as we both call it, open 7 days a week from 10 till 4.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come in a commercial vehicle of any size, they won't let you drop your rubbish unless you have a permit with them.
Is that the one in South? There's one in Southdown round there, isn't there?
Well, the one I go to is near Brickett Wood.
I know.
And, you know, it doesn't cost anything to go in. I don't know what a permit costs, but they won't let them dump the rubbish. Also, you have to be a local resident to take your rubbish there. So you have to show your driving licence. So if somebody's got a vehicle full of rubbish and they won't let them empty it there, what are they going to do? And that's why they fly tip. They get rid of it because there's nothing else they can do with it.
How are we going to stop this?
How we're going to stop this is to have more opening hours, have flexibility on who comes in and drops rubbish. At the end of the day, rubbish is rubbish. It doesn't matter whether it comes out of a van or a truck or a car or a trailer. It's just rubbish that needs to be disposed of.
What's the... I imagine normally, is it like builder's material and broken toilets and shower trays and something?
Well, no. I mean, there's a lot of rubbish. There's plasterboard. There's all sorts of things. I mean, my local centre, I mean, whatever you want to dispose of, there is a sign for where you dispose of it at.
Right.
And it's very well organised for a tip. And I always joke with my wife and say it's a bit messy here when we drive in. They need to be more open-minded and accept any kind of vehicle that's bringing in rubbish, and regardless of where you live.
Nat, may your countryside stay clean. Thank you. Richard, coming to you in a moment. Sarah in Westminster, it's not just large quantity rubbish dumping that causes distress. Every single day when I visit my livestock, there are drink cans, coffee cups, sandwich wrappers, nappies and everything just left in the gateway. It's sickening and a danger to livestock. Julia says the rise of fly tipping is definitely the cost of council charging. I live in Brent. I booked a slot to take a broken fence to the tip. When I arrived, I was told I'd need to pay £16. This is the sort of charges we were looking for. I couldn't understand why, so I went back home, broke it into pieces and put it in the bin. I could do that with a fence, but I can't do it, obviously, with bigger items. Richard in Marlborough. You're on... Hello, Richard.
Good morning, sir. We haven't spoken in a while. Congratulations on Mrs. Ferrari becoming Mrs. Ferrari.
No, I give it till Christmas, that one.
Well,
I'm not saying which Christmas.
No, best way, which Christmas.
Richard is my... Well, I was going to say my favourite. Richard is my only Thatcher. For those who don't know Richard, he is a Thatcher. On a lovely summer's day, he's to be found, obviously, on the roof, thatching away, having a pint of cider. How's life,
well,
Richard?
Life is pretty good, although yesterday was lovely. Today is drizzling again, Normality has returned.
Lovely to hear your voice again. I trust
you. Nice to speak with you.
Yeah, what can you tell me about tipping?
Someone messaged shortly, not long ago, to say Purton and Cricklade tip, Compton Bassett tips were due to close.
Yeah.
The council have done a Labour government thing, and U-turned.
Right.
And they're going to stay open until a new recycling centre is built in the north-northeast of the county. So that's encouraging in some ways. My trade waste...
Yeah, because you're a thatcher, so when you thatch a roof, if parts of the roof are a bit spent, presumably you're left with a lot of old thatch, for want of a better expression.
Yes, yeah. I mean, there had been days when I've been stripping thatched roofs for a day and a half, 2 days, and there will be tons and tons and tons of rubbish.
Really?
And now, obviously, it's all organic and biodegradable, I think is the modern trendy phrase to use. I take it very often to local dairy farmers, arable farmers, who put it on their manure heap.
Okay, right, and so it rots away, I suppose.
It rots away and is spread on the land and introduces organic matter into the soil. Now, officially, we're supposed to take it to some of these recycling centres.
Yeah, yeah.
The wire netting that comes off the roof that keeps the roof vermin-proof, that goes to a scrapyard.
Right. Okay.
So,
how much, when you're driving around the highways and byways of Wiltshire, Lassie, how much rubbish do you see sort of thrown in farmers' fields and in gateways and everything?
Oh, it's never ending. There's heaps of it. It's bad.
Stay safe on that roof. Thanks for your kind words about my recent wedding. Richard, lovely to hear from you. I thought of you the other day, actually. So, let's talk in the summer when you've got a pint of cider and you're thatching a roof down in Wiltshire. Move to other matters. Is there something sinister in all of this? Would you ever dob your neighbour in? Would you ever snitch on your neighbour because you felt they didn't have a TV licence? Now, I don't... Whether this is just a scare tactic, I don't know. But it's reported that thousands of licence fee snitches have ratted out their neighbours for illegally watching broadcast TV. More than 17,000 reports of people flouting TV licences have been submitted to the BBC, and anyone who wants to is urged to report an address they suspect of illegally watching broadcast TV or BBC iPlayer through a form on the TV licensing website. I sense it might be the TV licensing department that's put this out, actually. Critics say that this is a deeply unhealthy system that turns neighbours into informants. Would you telly on your neighbour? Polly Toynbee, broadcaster, author, columnist with The Guardian, author of many books, The Only Way Is Up, joins me now. Polly, would you snitch on your neighbour? Good morning.
Good morning. I don't know. I suppose it depends on your relationship with your neighbour. The danger is that people use it as a revenge tactic if they're having rows with their neighbours. But I think I'd talk to my neighbour about it. I think I'd say, look, you know, in effect, you're stealing off everybody else who pays their licence fee. You're diminishing the BBC in the same way that people who don't pay their taxes. I think most taxpayers are outraged that so many people, especially the very rich, who then hide it away in the British Virgin Islands and so on, feel they pay their PAYE and an awful lot of people get away without it. And, you know, in the last government, under the last government, the Tories used to put up big posters saying, do you know, if you know of anyone who's cheating on benefits, report them to this number. Yeah. And I think people also think, yeah, benefits cheats, you should dob them in. So what's different about the BBC licence fee? It does just the same thing. It diminishes a service that all the licence fee payers pay for. So I think it's probably right, whether I would or not. Well, it depends on the particular circumstances.
So broadly speaking, is right. Is there a conversation, though, about another way to fund the BBC? Is it, in all honesty, perhaps getting a little arcane, this funding system, Polly?
Well, not really, because it's, you know, they will change it slightly in the sense that it won't be about having a, you know, a physical television set when it comes up for renewal in 2027. But the government, Lisa Nandy, Culture Secretary, has made it pretty clear that the basic principle remains everybody pays licence fee. All other systems which have been looked at time and again, after all, we've had 14 years of a Tory government that really doesn't like the BBC, hates the idea of, a state, as it were, as a state-owned system. They couldn't find any better system. The moment you suggest ads, for instance, which could make it free, ITV and probably LBC, everybody else up in arms saying there's only so much advertising to go round, you will hugely diminish the quality of existing ITV services. It's not obvious that there is a better system. I mean, you could say, well, let's take it out as state funding, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But I think people should appreciate what they're getting. I mean, for a tiny price a week, they're getting such an incredible array of services. I mean, you look at the BBC's online news service, which is the most read and the most reliable in the sense that it's got absolutely everything there. Other news services are very good too. I mean, you know, LBC and Sky.
And I'm sure The Guardian is too. Let's get them all in there as well as LBC. Polly, thank you as ever. Polly Toynbee, broadcaster, author, columnist with The Guardian. The question there, Polly doesn't know that she would do it, but broadly speaking, she's in favour of it. I think it's a bit sinister. I have absolutely no knowledge whether my neighbour has a TV licence. And I don't want to be rude. It's nothing to do with me. And whether she does or she doesn't, it's absolutely nothing to do with me. And if she doesn't, I certainly... But what's the number again? This is extraordinary. 17,400 people. Unless someone's been reported twice, but I think it's fair to say more than 10,000 people, 17, have dobbed in their neighbour. But and how would you know? Unless they just you pay the TV licence. Are you mad? I haven't paid it for 20 years. I suppose then you think, well, that's a little bit out. But would you actually snitch on them? By the way, I was talking about how much it costs to dump stuff, and I'm grateful to one of the team who's taken us to the waste disposal at Colchester Recycling Centre. Now, I don't know if this is run by the local authority, but what I do know... Oh, it's not, I see. So this is the Dunmo Group. So presumably they're doing that. Are they doing that on behalf of the local authority? I don't know. But here we go. If you take your fridge there, it's £50. It's £5 for a paint tin. It's £5 for a fluorescent tube. It's £30 for a bathtub. Now, I'm not saying this means you should throw it in a field. Of course you shouldn't. It's £10 for a tyre. If it's a commercial tyre, it's £30. If it's an agricultural tyre, as in a tractor, £130 to take it to the tip. Again, you should not just leave it rotting in a field, but... We'll come back to that. And if we're speaking about rural affairs... What about the country pub in Kent? He drinks a whiskey drink, he drinks a vodka drink, he drinks a lager drink, he drinks a cider drink. He sings the songs that remind him of the good times, he sings the songs that remind him of the best times. The pub trade is failing, but one scanny publican found a way to drive up trade. Once you've had a drink, he'll drive you home safely. But the local council said, nope, up with that we cannot put. It's against the regulations. We'll give you more after this. 9.30 breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news, Dominic Ellis.
A government-ordered review has found NHS maternity services in England are failing women and babies. The interim report identified issues including staff shortages, racism and a reluctance to admit mistakes. The Conservative leader has been accused of degrading politics after claiming Labour is being called a pedo defenders party. But Kemi Badenoch has told LBC she won't retract her remarks because she's merely pointing out a fact. And the government's outlining how £50 million in extra funding will be used to help tackle homelessness. Local authorities will be given the money to support people with struggles such as mental health complications and addiction. LBC weather. Rain will move across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales, but staying dry in the southeast of England, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
When you smile,
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Last year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in-store or see three.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data 2H 2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
We'll come back to our conversation about fly tipping. We'll come back to the conversation about student loan as well. That was the one that really got you talking in the first hour. I think it's unfair to characterise this as a government U-turn if they do review it. They didn't start this policy. All right, they have defended it, but I don't think this is a full U-turn. Let's hope some sense comes about there, and we'll come back to that conversation. Now, as I've said before, we all know the hospitality sector is in trouble. We know the pub sector is in crisis. It was reportedly last year, them closing at about, was it 1 a week or something? Horrific numbers that we're losing. So what of a publican who's tried to find a way around it and has been blocked by his local authority? Well, a council in Kent is now doubling down on its decision to ban the landlord from offering customers lifts home. Paul Hartfield, he has the Flying Horse in Smarden, and good luck to him, raised hundreds of pounds for charity by asking punters to make small donations to the Motor Neurone Disease Association for using his cab. So, you go there, you have a few pints with your mates, with your wife, with your husband or whatever. He'll drive you home and you give a few quid to charity. What's not to like? Well, Ashford Borough Council, let's name them again, Ashford Borough Council, put a stop to it, saying it amounted to private hire. So I asked LBC's Helen Hodnot not to go to the pub. It wasn't a tough ask, down in Kent, on the sunniest day of the year so far, and filed this report.
What would you like?
Could I please have a half pint of cider?
Of course you can.
Thanks so much.
The Flying Horse Pub in Smarden, a village of quaint cottages, a medieval church, and a pub landlord banned from driving his customers home.
Paul Hartfield, and I'm the landlord of the Flying Horse in Smarden. It's just mainly to get my customers home overnight. If they've had a drink, it's easier for me to take them home rather than let them walk, especially around here with the no street lights, potholes. Is they got a 15-minute walk or a one-minute drive.
Since buying an old black cab in November, Paul, who worked in London's taxi trade for 3 decades, has driven around 100 customers home.
Yeah, it's great, yeah. Paul gives us a lift back when we've finished our food and had a couple of pints. It saves me having to walk home, so, which is good. And, yeah, the missus likes it as well.
But Paul doesn't take payments himself, asking punters instead to make a donation to the Motor Neurone Disease Association, and he's raised around £700 to date.
We chose MND because one of my customers here, her mum's got MND, diagnosed 18 months ago, and it's just a horrible disease.
But last week, the service came to a screeching halt after Ashford Borough Council banned it, saying a business providing a car for hire with the services of a driver, with or without direct payment of money, is a licensable activity. And Paul doesn't have a private hire licence.
Could we go out and have a little spin in the forbidden taxi?
No problem at all.
So the number plate, it's PU13CAB, which obviously looks like pub cab. Right, I'm going to jump in the back. So now there is a QR code that has been put in the back. So I would scan it and then be able to choose which charity I was going to be donating to.
Exactly, yeah. There'd be two charities in there, MND and the Farmers, Mental Health in Farmers.
And do you find that people are happy to donate? Are they keen to do that rather than, I guess, accept a free ride?
Yeah, they're keen to donate.
Back in the pub, people tell me what they think about the council's crackdown.
Disappointed and perplexed.
He is just generous and selfless, and he does this because he wants to.
I think it's appalling. It's a mad decision by the council.
But the council's doubled down, telling me the rules are about making sure potentially risky, unregulated transport services aren't able to operate. Hoping for a compromise, Paul is keen to get the service up and running again ASAP. But for now, the pub cab is parked up outside, red-lighted by regulation.
LBC's Helen Hodnot reporting. If anyone's listening from Ashford Borough Council, just rethink this. I mean, you haven't got street lighting in this village, which isn't your fault. I'm not blaming you for that. So this gets the people home safely. It's providing trade for a pub, which you'll want to keep because they'll pay your council tax. And it's providing money for charity. That is extraordinarily petty-minded, and you desperately need to rethink that. The Flying Horse in Smarden. Good luck to everyone down there. Now, earlier I asked, would you snitch on your neighbour for their TV licence? And this comes in, snitching on TV licence evaders is correct and the proper thing to do. I would snitch on you, Nick. Yours kindly, Sir Lindsay Hoyle. That is quite clever. That, I don't know who it really is, but that is very clever. We're going fly-tipping, or hopefully we're not. Trevor's in Lincoln. What's the story you're going to tell me? Hello, Trevor, you're on the radio. Morning. Oh, Lord, no, you're not. Ah, we got you. Yes, sir. What's the story you're going to tell me? Good morning.
Hello, mate. I was just going to...
You're right there.
Hello? Yeah, can you hear me?
I hear you well, Trevor. Yes, you're on the radio. Oh. Everyone's hearing you. Yes.
Sorry, mate, I've been on the line that long. I thought that was part of the show.
You are on the show.
Okay.
How are you getting on there? How's life today, Trevor? Is anything working out for you this morning, Trev?
I'm all right. I'm on a roof, so...
You're on a roof?
I'm on a roof.
What are you doing up there? Has she kicked you out again?
Yeah, all the time, mate, all the time. All it was is, where I'm from, obviously Lincoln, the council about 10 years ago, used to have a service where they used to tell the old estate when it was coming. It was only Saturday at 10 o'clock.
Right.
And they used to bring a bin wagon, and everyone used to bring the rubbish and fire it out of the bin wagon.
Right, right.
So that stopped everyone sticking chest of drawers, anything on the corners. So
right.
On the Saturday morning, everybody had turned up with wheelbarrows full of rubbish and they just take it away for free.
Hang on, and that's still going on or they stopped it?
No, they stopped it. Stopped it about 10 years ago.
Oh, that's such
a
good idea.
Yeah, because there used to be a big massive pile, two bin men used to come, start firing it in, all the neighbours and everything used to give an hand. People used to check it the night before, but that didn't matter. There was a massive rubbish. Yeah. We all used to put it in together. And he used to take it.
So are you in Lincoln, or are you out in Lincolnshire? Are you in a built-up area or in a rural area, Trevor?
No, we're on a built-up area on a carrots estate in Lincoln.
Okay, and is there a lot of dumping out when you go out and around Lincoln and Lincolnshire? Is there a lot of it now being left in fields and everywhere?
Well, not just in fields, on the streets.
Really?
I went past this morning on the corner of the street, someone put a chest of drawers there. They're just sticking things everywhere.
What, they just put a chest of drawers at the end of the road?
Yeah, in the street, yeah. It's quite common. And the council come and take them a few days later. Mattresses, beds.
Really?
It's ridiculous, really.
Used to be all right. What are you doing on a roof, by the way? You're a roofer, are you?
Yeah, I'm capping a chimney off today.
Capping a chimney off. How high up are you?
About 30 foot, I think, at the minute.
Sunny day in Lincoln?
Cloudy.
All right, you be sure to tie that ladder safely. Be well. Come down to terra firma as soon as you can. Trevor, thanks for your input on that. Let's go back to the conversation we were having in the first hour of the show. And a possible change of heart. I don't think it should be a U-turn, in fairness. A possible change of heart over student loans. That seems to be in the wind. Although, if we go to last month, Rachel Reeves told LBC's political editor, Natasha Clarke...
Well, it is important that you don't have to start paying back the student loan until you earn enough money. And that is the point of the student loan system, that you get the loan, you get that great university education, and you only pay it back if you can afford to do so. And obviously, after a period of time, that gets written off entirely. I think that is the fair system.
What a difference a month or a bit of political pressure makes, because here she is again, Rachel Reeves, speaking to LBC's Joe Draper yesterday.
Like many things, the student loan system is broken. We are doing things like bringing back maintenance grants. Is there more to do? Of course there is.
And we took calls on this in the first hour. First up was Sarah in Epsom.
So I'm talking about my daughter. Well, she's up to £93,000 at the moment.
Oh, my God, I think you've won. I think that's the highest I've ever seen, even on emails. Goodness me.
She did her undergrad in a biomedicine, and then recently she's completed her master's in immunology, hoping to do a medical writing job,
right,
and can't get a job.
Alex in Yeovil.
I'm a sort of older end of the scale, and in my late 40s I had came out of a chaotic divorce and felt I needed to kind of make some changes in my life. And I was told that what I needed to do was to go and get a degree, which I didn't have, and then sign up for teacher training. So the most expedient way of doing that was for me to go and do a year's master's degree and then sign up for teacher training. So I hadn't really realised at the time that I was going to have to take out two separate loans for that. So there was going to be the master's and then the undergraduate teacher training.
Mm.
So I then finally graduated as a teacher and discovered that I was being charged 15% of my wage packet.
Oh my, let's get Alison in Swindon into the conversation.
I'm angry about this, Nick,
right,
because this affects us all.
Yep.
This affects the future of our country, our children. They can't contribute to society in the way they were expecting to after doing their degrees. And, you know, this is not just affecting my children, this is affecting my nephews. It's affecting our economy and our future.
You know how we thought Sarah's daughter had hit the record? Well, that's been beaten. Josh says, due to my personal circumstances, I qualified for the maximum maintenance loan available, which I took. I studied medicine for 6 years. By the end of my course, the total I had borrowed was £83,690. The balance now, despite paying over £4,000 towards this, the salary for first year's doctors wasn't enough to meet the repayment threshold in year one, and because of interest, I now owe £120,000. So Josh, that I assume young man, he doesn't have to be, but I assume, yes, he's a student just come out, has done everything right. We now have him, as I imagine, a resident doctor. We certainly have him as a doctor. And he's £120,000 in the hole. How can that possibly be right? Leslie's in Streatham. Leslie, who are we talking about in your case? Good morning.
Hi, morning, yeah. Hello. We're talking about... Hiya, yeah, we're talking about my son.
Yeah.
Who is...
Who is how old, sorry?
He's 23.
23, yeah.
Yeah, we had a very heated discussion when he was 18 about me wanting him to go to university. Mm-hmm. He was adamant that he wasn't going to university. Quote, I'm not going to get £50,000 in debt and come out with no job, close quotes. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, that's fine, but you have to do something. And he's managed to find himself on an apprenticeship with a train company. And he's training as a train engineer and he's thoroughly enjoying it. And cheekily said to me, see, Mum, I'm going to get my degree anyway and not pay.
do you mind if I ask, do you have younger children?
I do. I have one that is just about to sit her GCSEs,
right.
And she also has to pick up an apprenticeship. But I also have an older one in her 30s who did her degree. She did her first degree in architecture and works in building construction and only paid £3,000 a year. So I think she was right at the beginning of when the loan started.
I see.
Yeah.
What were
so
your,
I've got the, kind of like...
Yeah,
sorry.
You've got the age range there, haven't you? Girl who's just starting her GCSEs, what advice, when she says, Mum, shall I go... In a couple of years, when she says, Mum, shall I go to university, what do you think advice you'll give?
You absolutely don't go. If you can find an apprenticeship within the field that she wants to do, which is kind of graphic design, art, that type of area. She wants to do medical illustration, which is quite niche.
Mm-hmm.
But if she can find something, some type of apprenticeship that supports her, I would advise her not to go. The thing is, Nick, when we talk about student loans, children, adults, we hear the word loan. It is a loan. You do have to pay it back eventually, even if you don't pay it all back. And children have that hanging over their heads. When they want to try and find somewhere to live, or, you know, transport, everything is so expensive. And then you've also got that on top of your everyday living. There has to be another way.
There has to be another way. I think the government might be trying to seek to find another way. Leslie, thank you for your input on that. We'll take more of your calls. Can we beat that £120,000? And surely this is a policy that actually would earn the government some credit in every sense of the word. 9:46 LBC News headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
A government-ordered review has found NHS maternity services in England are failing women and babies. The Conservative leader has been accused of degrading politics after claiming Labour is being called a paedo defenders party. An LBC has learned security alerts are being recorded at Britain's nuclear submarine base every 3 days. LBC weather, rain will move across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales, staying dry in the southeast of England, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still long delays on the M25 anti-clockwise up to junction 28 at the A12. It's because those emergency works are taking place. There are still delays of around half an hour. The A12's very busy northbound to junction 18 at Danbury. It's because of an accident and the exit slip road is closed as well. The A13's very busy westbound to the M25 junction. There's some debris across the road. On the North Circular Road, the westbound entry slip road from Waterworks Corners is closed. It's following an accident and that's causing lengthy delays in the area, especially on Woodford Green. Also, the problems on the trains continue. Gatwick Express, Great Western Railway, Southern and Thames Link are delayed via Gatwick Airport.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Yet more grim news from maternity wards in this country. What exactly is going on? And should you follow your dreams?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Really? The real secret to feeling young? Simply living young. And right now you can roll young with £500 off across the SEAT range on top of existing offers, including the fun new SEAT Ibiza and Arona. But this offer won't last forever. Order by the 31st of March. SEAT. Rolling young. UK retail customers excluding contract hire. 18 plus. Order by 31st of March and collect by 30th of June. Subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. Helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Get extra support with Immunace multivitamins, with vitamin D, zinc and selenium, which contribute to the normal function of the immune system. Immunace from Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. Verification at vitabiotics.com. From Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in store or see three.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data 2H 2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
Go where umbrellas are for cocktails. There's not long left to get up to £300 off city breaks in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Plus, get up to 20% off flights. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Sale ends 3rd of March. Holidays, min spend and at all protected. T's and C's apply.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only N-Tax car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Change in the wind there could be as regards student loans, and surely there should be too. Susan in Epsom. Susan, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Hiya. I'm calling about myself. And I am on the very low spectrum of student loan because I took Plan 2 for my master's.
Right.
And I think the last year I started looking at how much interest I was acquiring regarding the paying it up. And at some point...
Do you mind if I ask how much, you know, you borrow, what the sort of debt is?
So I borrowed £10,500, there or thereabout. By the moment that I started repaying, that went up in up to over £13,000.
That's because of interest, is it?
Yes, yes. Right. So at some point, the interest was 8.6%.
Right. Good Lord. Right. Right.
So at the moment, I'm just below £10,000. And I'm looking. So at the moment, I actually checked it today morning. So it's
6.3% interest is what you're saying.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is RPI and then 3% on top. And I'm thinking that actually I would be better off to actually take a loan and pay it off.
Oh, like gosh, bank yeah, loan, of course.
And pay off, because it's cheaper to actually take a loan from the bank and just pay it off. But my point is that we're all talking about the interest, but what people don't talk about the interest, and it's not shown to young people who are taking the loans, is that your interest is being acquired from the moment you take your first installment.
Mm-hmm.
So when that first payment on your year one is being given to the university, that's the moment when you start paying interest on. You don't start repaying the student loan, not when you hit the threshold, but actually it is April after you've finished your degree. So you've got £27,000 still thereabout on your student loan for undergrads.
Yes.
and then you plus all of the interest.
Yes.
And on all of that, you're paying interest for another 9 months until April following your, if you hit the £27,000 threshold.
Let me ask you, knowing all this now, do you regret doing this, taking the loan?
I don't regret doing masters. I regret taking a loan. I actually, knowing, no one told me what the interest rates were.
Yep.
I would have actually taken a loan from the bank and paid it as a loan from the bank.
What do you think, lastly, noting it wasn't this government that brought it in, but what do you think this government should do now, lastly, Susan?
The problem to me is, it's actually, when we're looking at how they're going to, if they say, oh, we're going to pay off, remove all of the interest, but it's like, well, I've paid already £3,500 of the interest. How is that going to be calculated towards my the capital that I took on?
Yes, or, the first loan.
And it actually, the clarity, what the money is used for, because no one's telling us, we're repaying, but where that money goes to, no one's right. telling you that, and no one's actually asking that kind of question.
Susan, thanks for sharing so much. I hope you managed to get away, chisel through that debt, through the loan, and indeed the interest that you mentioned. Thank you. Tony in Birmingham. Tony, your story. Good morning.
Good morning. Morning, Nick. I'll give you the numbers. My son is in the first year at a Russell Group University, so one of the premier, if he's lucky, in that terms. I'm not going to say what the university is.
Sure.
$9,700 for the tuition.
Mm-hmm.
Just under 9,000 for the student accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets a 5,000, the minimum maintenance loan, which doesn't cover anything other than his food. It doesn't cover going out. He's got to try and get a job, et cetera, et cetera. So if you tally those three up, forgetting about interest,
mm-hmm.
you're approaching 25,000.
Yep. 23 and a bit more. I've got 24 grand.
24 grand. Yeah. Times that by three or four if he decides it won't quite...
£100,000.
Indeed. Yeah, and that's not... Forget about interest at the moment. There's no interest on any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... But there's a couple of anomalies that I said to your researcher that I find... Because I'm paying for his accommodation, and he's quite lucky that he's got, you know, that...
Absolutely. A lot of kids don't have that, of course.
They don't have that.
No, they
don't have that. But listen to this. So... $9,000 just under for his student accommodation, which is on campus. In the second year, he moves out into this luxury house with six other people just outside the city centre. It's very mm-hmm. close to the city centre.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what his accommodation costs are second year?
I dread to think. Go on, how much?
$5,000.
Right. So that's...
So something is going wrong somewhere with the universities making X, Y, Z. And I don't mind it because he's at a premier university, but there's something going on there to begin with, let alone, you know, the thick end of 100,000. I mean, how the hell is anyone going to survive into the future, you know, when they're trying to look for a job?
And this, as we're speaking...
By the way, the initial...
Go ahead.
The government originally, this government, in their original manifesto, were going to do away with university tuition fees a few years ago. Now they pile on interest, the fees are going up. I mean, what is going on?
Lastly, as you're speaking, Tony, another Tony has texted to say, no one tells these children they have to go to university. It's their fault. Tony.
That's absolutely ridiculous, because in today's world, my son has got a chance globally of getting a job as a result of going to a premier university.
Mm.
His world of opportunities has opened up. I would suggest that if people are going to university for what I would consider to be, and I'm not being pompous, but considered to be a lesser degree, I would say don't do it over a million years and get an apprenticeship. But he's got global opportunities as a result of doing that and may well be able to pay off the 100,000.
Tony, best wishes to the lad. Well done. At a Russell Group, he's done really well. By the way, we looked up the figure. The total level of student debt in this country, £267 billion. So no government can afford to write that off. Jamie in Basingstoke, you've got a minute. Jamie, all yours. Go ahead, your story. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ferrari.
Yes.
I am calling from Basingstoke, as you said. I went to university and finished in 2017. Was around about £80,000 in debt then. Mm-hmm. Fell in love, got married, had children. So I stay close to home.
Yep.
And it currently sits at £115,000.
Oh, I think you're virtually the record so far. My goodness. Do you make monthly payments?
No, unfortunately, I don't make enough to reach the threshold, which right. for me was £28,000 in plan two.
Right. When you get up in the morning, how much does this concern you, lastly?
Me and my partner are currently trying to save anything we can, because we would like to buy a property, but it feels like the millstone hanging around my neck.
Jamie, you had the last word. Thank you for your input. I can imagine it does for you and your partner. Best wishes to you both. I'm done for the day. If you miss any of the show, listen back on the free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free now. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I found myself wondering this morning Do you remember when someone asked a question about how Deja Vu works on Mystery Hour? Which should be back today, by the way, for the first time in almost 5 weeks, given the incredibly inconsiderate nature of the news recently. But I have Deja Vu with some stories. I sit here, and I look at a report, or I look at a release, and I think, oh, we must talk about this, it's very important. And then I realise we talked about it before. And then I realise that the story from which I'm deriving my interest, the story which I'm going to use as a launch pad into a topic, looks exactly the same as the story that we used last time. I'm talking about the appalling treatment of mothers in British maternity wards.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a national investigation has concluded women and babies are being failed by NHS maternity services in England. The interim reports found there's a lack of kindness and compassion, as well as issues including racism and staff shortages. Baroness Amos is leading the government-ordered review. Her final report is due out in April.
What I have been asked to do is to come up with some clear national recommendations that will stop this and will make a difference. It just cannot continue.
The number of asylum seekers being housed temporarily in hotels in the UK has fallen to the lowest level for 18 months. Home Office figures just released show the total stood at just over 30,000 at the end of last year. A row has broken out after the Conservative leader refused to apologise for claiming Labour is being called a paedo defenders party. It follows an exchange between Kemi Badenoch and Sir Keir Starmer at Prime Minister's Questions yesterday. Labour MPs have reportedly complained the phrase has been shouted at them following the Peter Mandelson-Jeffrey Epstein saga. Government Minister Alison McGovern's told LBC the remarks are not helpful.
I think it's not good. We as politicians are responsible for the words we say, and that we can debate issues in a very serious, robust and forthright way without using the language that's going to be inflammatory and make the whole situation of the challenge we're facing in communities much worse.
Peter Mandelson denies he had prior knowledge of Jeffrey Epstein's sex crimes during their friendship. LBC has learned security alerts are being recorded at Britain's nuclear submarine base every 3 days. 10 times as many reports were flagged at Faslane last year compared with before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The Ministry of Defence has declined to disclose the nature of the alerts but says it flags every activity. And polls are open in the Gorton and Denton by-election in Greater Manchester. It was triggered by the resignation of the MP Andrew Gwynn. Polling stations close at 10 o'clock tonight. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 8 at 10,815. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, rain moving across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales throughout today, staying dry in the southeast of England with a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The Cupra Drive event is back. On top of existing offers, get £1,000 off across the range, including the dynamic Cupra 4Mentor, the sporty Cupra Terramar, and the daring Cupra Leon. Just order by 31st of March and collect by 30th of June. Follow your impulse. Search Cupra Drive Event.
T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus. New vehicles only. Subject to availability. Saving including VAT apply to the on-the-road price.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the, I don't know, how interested are you in the below-the-bonnet ruminations that I sometimes inflict upon you in the morning, the whys and the wherefores of what we find interesting and indeed why we find it interesting. It occurred to me this morning, two things occurred to me this morning, one of which I explained to you a moment ago in characteristically clumsy fashion, but the other of which probably merits a mention, because I sometimes fall into the trap of thinking that you're here all day, every day. You know, and that you've been here for two decades. So I think, well, you know exactly what I'm talking about when I reference some obscure memory from the dim and distant past, from one of the mornings that we've spent together. Of course you don't. Even if you are listening to this program every day, you're not paying rapt attention, are you? It's not as if you're sitting there with a notebook jotting down, well, unless you're one of the people trying to get me into trouble constantly, of course, but if you're normal, you're not sitting there with a notebook jotting down little insights and aperçus in order to record them for posterity. So it's sometimes worth me mentioning to you why interest in stories ebbs and flows. This one is probably the most obvious one of all, but it only struck me this morning that the older my children get, the less engaged I am immediately, the less sort of emotionally and immediately engaged I am with stories about maternity wards and maternity services. It's a failure of mine, because it doesn't become more or less interesting as a story of national import according to how recently you were in one, does it? But we're only human. And when I first started talking to you about maternity services in England, I probably shouldn't have said the United Kingdom a moment ago in my trail, but when I first started talking to you about maternity services, I had never availed myself of them. I was in my first or second year in this job when my oldest was born. Information that was relayed to the pitifully small number of people that were listening to LBC at the time. The information of the birth of my first child was relayed to the listeners to this program by a minicab driver who picked me up outside Hammersmith Hospital, and dropped me off without letting on, I think, that he knew who I was, and then phoned my holiday cover on LBC to reveal the successful details of my eldest child's birth, like a kind of like a war correspondent, like an undercut, like a cross between River Cartwright or George Smiley and, oh, I don't know, John Simpson or Jeremy Bowen. I mean, he was phoning in a world exclusive from West London, and that is an indication of why, in the course of the last 20 years, I have found myself less interested with each passing year in what is going on in maternity wards. And I have to change that today, because how dare I base the importance of a story upon my own personal proximity to it? Maternity services in England are failing too many families with problems at every stage of the maternity journey. It's an interim report by Baroness Amos, who is leading a government-commissioned review. Racism, staffing and accountability issues are among the six factors already identified by the Baroness, with more than 8,000 people submitting evidence and the Baroness herself meeting with 400 families. We get the final recommendations in April. It's important to remember that she has reported seeing bad, poor, good and excellent care coexisting side by side. This is always something of a tightrope to walk, because you are listening to this as somebody who works in the sector, and you are feeling maligned and attacked and unfairly judged when you know, or at least you're pretty sure, that you do a cracking job in often very difficult circumstances. So let's read that in reverse order. She has encountered care that is excellent, good, bad and poor. All of those things exist, but of course reports like this are designed to ensure that you minimise the amount of bad and poor and maximise the amount of good and excellent. So inevitably you come into a story like this from the other end of the funnel, or the other end of the telescope. You come at it from the negative end with, I hope, and you will remind me, a constant caveat that this is not about everybody. This is not about everybody. But it might well be about you, particularly as a mum, particularly as a parent who has gone through the system. I mean, even if I start off by saying, why is it so bad, then I fall headlong into the trap that I've just described, isn't it? Isn't it? I mean, don't I? I say, why is it so bad? And you go, well, hang on a minute, you just told us to remember that it's not always that bad, and there are plenty of people who have very positive experiences. But we're going to come at it more or less from that angle. I what's your relationship with your own temper like? How good are you at being a squeaky wheel? You know, I think I fell into this last year, and I apologise for it, because I think it's quite misogynistic, calling people Karen if they complain about things. I mean, some of the footage that has been recorded by people who use the word Karen as a pejorative is shameful, and the people being termed Karens are behaving appallingly. But you can't just pick a woman's name and turn it into an insult, says a man who routinely uses Herbert as a description of all various ghouls and vampires working in the so-called think tank sector. But you can't do that. But how good are you at being a squeaky wheel? It's a really odd thing, because and there's a reason why I mentioned temper. Squeaky wheels stay calm. Squeaky wheels demand better service or point out problems. I used to have quite a short temper. I'm getting better all the time, thankfully, and it's an important thing to try to do. But I still have an understanding of road rage, for example. I don't drive enough, really, to suffer from it myself, but I used to get second-hand road rage if I felt someone was disrespecting my wife in the car. And the speed, if you forgive the pun, the speed with which you go from 0 to 60... when you're suffering from road rage is extraordinary. So that capacity inside us to lose the plot does have no bearing whatsoever on your ability to be a squeaky wheel. So, for example, I'm terrified of complaining or drawing attention to myself. Terrified's a bit strong, but I'm very uncomfortable, even in the maternity ward, of venturing into the corridor to try to get help. And here's the reason why I think this is relevant. It's because I work on the presumption that you're all doing your best and you're all being brilliant. And that's quite naive and almost certainly wrong. So when Mrs. O'Brien was in labour the first time, we didn't have a perfect experience. And I'm afraid to tell you that I, at the time, didn't fully appreciate that. That there were large and unconscionable gaps between visits. There was a failure to notice how quickly things had progressed. I won't use the word dilation an inappropriate amount of times on the programme, but there was a failure to recognise how quickly things had progressed, which meant that my wife was in unnecessary discomfort and unnecessary pain, and she was scared of the absence of care and concern. And my job, I didn't have many jobs, snacks, I always remember, from the antenatal classes. Don't forget to take snacks. Turns out they weren't meant to be for me. Pork pie, not a very welcome product in a maternity. Well, not at least in the one that we were in. Delicious, though. My job was to go into the corridor and find someone to come back to the ward. And I found it almost unbearably terrible. I found it almost unbearably embarrassing. Oh, no, I can't do that. So I suppose what I'm asking is whether or not you recognise what I'm describing. Because if you're a squeaky wheel, you find it really easy. It's probably a bit like haggling. Is it a bit like haggling? If you find haggling really easy. It's the things that make you uncomfortable. So you walk out into the corridor, you're looking for a nurse. So automatically you're presuming that they're not that busy anyway and they are just choosing not to come and look after you, which seems to me, or used to seem to me, to be very unfair. The second thing you're presuming is that they're capable of dropping everything if they are busy to come and look after you, which is probably not the case. The third thing that you're presuming is that you automatically become a higher priority than all the other people on the ward, which, of course, if you're talking about your own wife, you kind of should be but shouldn't be at the same time. And the other problem you've got is not actually knowing what it is that you want. You just know that you want some, your wife wants somebody to come. So I can go from 0 to 60 if I feel that you're disrespecting my children or my wife, but I can't go into a hospital corridor and find a nurse to come and look after my wife when she feels a bit frightened and alone in a maternity ward. And the reason for that, and this is the important point, the reason for that is the presumption that these are, that these people are doing the work of the angels. The reason for that, in my case, I can't speak for you, is the presumption that they are the best of us. That people working on maternity wards have a vocation and levels of compassion and care and concern that are well above average. Now, I still believe that to be true in the first instance, right? In the first instance. But everybody, when they've done a job for a while, has to fight very, very hard not to slip away from their A game. The harder something is, it is as a daily grind, the harder it is to retain the same levels of dedication and commitment in the face of, you might have, employer lethargy or employer incompetence. You can't do the job you want to do if you haven't got enough colleagues, if you haven't got enough support. And, of course, you might become calcified. You might become a little bit crueler. You might become inured to the human condition the more you are exposed to it. You see it with journalists, particularly journalists who have to cover hideous events. They have to build a sort of, I never know quite how to pronounce this word, but I always say carapace. It can't be carapace, can it? You have to build a sort of carapace, an armour to protect yourself from the trauma. It doesn't always work. That's how you end up with PTSD, even though you seemed fine at the time. But if you're exposed to hideousness, if you're exposed to traumatic events, you build a kind of defense mechanism that mentally minimizes the impact of what you're witnessing. And I suspect that maternity wards probably do that to people as well. The racism also is something that I am unlikely to experience, or guaranteed not to experience. The idea that a black woman in a maternity ward is going to receive worse treatment than a white woman is built on a bunch of presumptions about, for example, the physical strength of black women. The fact that we often see black girls as being much older than we would their white equivalents. You see that in Law and Order. You see that hideous story a couple of years ago about strip searching. But there's also an idea that is built in, it's complicit and it's racist, that the black woman is somehow more physically robust than a white woman and has a higher pain threshold. That's something I discovered from you. But I don't always know how you would know that was going on in a hospital setting, how you would know that was the reason that you were not receiving the help that you deserved or that you would have demanded if you didn't suffer from the sort of heebie-jeebies that I've described about having a squeaky wheel. There are stereotypes. Asian women stereotyped as princesses, with the implication that they are overly demanding or unable to cope with pain. Black women describing the opposite experience as being deemed to have tough skin and being able to tolerate pain. Muslim families describe feeling discriminated against on the basis of their religion and feeling unable to raise concerns due to fear that those discriminatory attitudes may result in poor treatment for their baby. What's going on? What's going on? And I really want to handle this sensitively, if I can. But how much, how unhelpful is it to have this image in my head of everybody in a maternity ward being on the side of the angels? So you've got, let me just hit the six things that Baroness Amos has already identified. You've got poor relationships between team members, obstetricians and midwives, perhaps, racist and bullying behaviour of senior clinicians not being dealt with by management. You've got a depletion of services because of capacity pressures, stretched antenatal wards, delivery units, meaning that they can't do what they want to do. Because there are delays in admissions and the use of community midwives in delivery units can impact safety. You have structural racism and persistent inequalities, which is not an opinion, I'm very sad to tell you, it's counting. It's a notably higher risk of adverse outcomes for women from black and Asian backgrounds and for women from more deprived areas. Discrimination against disabled women, Muslim families, refugee and asylum women, LGBT families was also reported. You can hardly be surprised by that, given that discrimination against those groups of people is a practically open season in much of our media and political class at the moment. Hideously for me, a lack of compassion and transparency when baby loss or baby harm occurs. So mothers wrongly blame themselves, which will obviously compound their trauma and impede opportunities to learn from mistakes. Most obviously, there's not enough personnel to provide safe care, and the buildings, this is item six, are often outdated and dilapidated, in some cases so badly that criminal care is compromised. And to go back to the lack of compassion and transparency when baby loss occurs, bereavement spaces are insufficient or non-existent even in some trusts. I hate one element of the question I'm about to ask you, but I think it is actually important that I ask it, with the constant caveat that huge numbers of people working in this sector are brilliant. But how much of these problems are caused by the people working on the wards? 03456060973. And also, what happened to you that makes you look at this story with a very different feeling from the one that I have? You read this headline with a grim sense of familiarity. You hear a headline that says racism and staffing issues are factors in failing maternity care. Why is maternity care failing, and how much of the responsibility lies with maternity carers? So you tell me what you think it is. Is it the buildings? Is it the people? Is it the funding? And how, if you have experienced racism in a maternity ward, how do you know it was racism? And please let me qualify that briefly. It's not something many of us do very often, okay? So how do you know that the white woman next door in the next ward wasn't being treated exactly the same as, or in the next bed, wasn't being treated? How do we know that these two stereotypes, the Asian woman being stereotyped as a princess, being overly demanding or unable to cope with pain, and the black woman being stereotyped as being able to tolerate more pain than a white woman or an Asian woman and having tough skin, both groups ending up more likely to have bad experiences. How do we know? How do you know that that's what's going on? I hope that's not an inappropriate question, but it's a sincere one. The number you need is 03456060973. And this isn't one of those conversations that's largely about women that I'm going to confine to women, because this is when often, very often, dads are more exposed to what's going on beyond the bed than mums are. Or partners. It doesn't have to be dad. But this isn't one of the conversations about women's health that I'm going to ban men from mansplaining or contributing to, because we go through as much emotional or possibly more emotional trauma than our partners do. But why are maternity services in this country failing? Just your thoughts. LBC.
Upgrade your car at Ancaster MG this spring. With hundreds of new and used electrified vehicles in stock and great offers across the range, there's never been a better time to change. From the all-new MGS 5 EV or MGS 6 EV to the plug-in MGHS hybrid or the fully electric MGIM range, we've got the drive just for you. So book your test drive at ancaster.co.uk/test drive.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, stop working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Danny Dyer's Proper Deal Hotline.
Danny, my mates are in the game and my broadband's gone down. I'm still trying to connect.
No worries. Sky will patch things up proper. Switch to Sky Full Fibre 150. Gets you into the action rapid. Your mates will be jealous of that.
Nice one, brother.
Nice one, brother. Switch to Sky Broadband for £24 a month. Sky's lowest ever price. And get up to £200 towards leaving fees.
Price will increase by £3 a month from the 1st of April 2026 and may change during 24-month minimum term. Offer ends 11th of March. Switching credit with proof of leaving fees paid. Terms apply.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Caterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears, and four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood, and Cafes!
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
23 minutes after 10 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm not for a moment doubting it. The numbers support the stereotyping. But how do you know when you're on the maternity ward that the reason why you're receiving suboptimal treatment is racism? But, I mean, obviously it goes without saying that plenty of white women will have had suboptimal experiences as well, because the entire system is described as failing. And that's the second part of my question. Why? What do you point at first as reasons for this failure? Rowena is in Forest Hill. Rowena, what can you tell us?
Hi, James. I've got a five-year-old now. I live in London. We're quite lucky in London. We can choose which hospital we want to have our children at. It's not really a location lottery as it is in some other parts of the UK. Sorry, go on.
No, how did you know I was going to interrupt you? Did I make a noise?
I was literally
saying to myself, don't interrupt her. But I just wondered, because it's a while for me. It's 18 years in April since I was in a maternity ward. Do you use, like, TripAdvisor? I mean, do you rank?
No, I work in hospitals. I have done for almost 20 years now.
Okay.
So I do have a good insight, not necessarily about maternity units, but in terms of general care in hospitals.
And like everything else, some are going to be better than others. All right, on with the story. I'll carry on.
Precisely. Yeah. So I chose the hospital that I work in.
Okay.
Because I was very happy at the hospital, and I knew that they train their staff to a good standard. And I've had fibroids.
Okay.
Since 20s, that's when I realised it, my early 20s. And it did throw up a few complications during my pregnancy. I had to have more scans than usual.
Right.
And there came a week, I think I was about 7 months pregnant, and there came a week when I was just in absolutely debilitating pain. I have never known anything like it. Nothing relieved the pain. Nothing made it easier. There was no let up from it either, so I couldn't sleep. It wasn't like contractual pain that comes in waves. It was just a constant, almost tip of a hot knife in the side of my it was absolutely awful.
Okay.
I tried to deal with it as best as I could myself at home.
Right.
But eventually had to go into the hospital and was taken to the maternity assessment unit.
Right. And you're not only in great pain, you're presumably quite terrified.
I'm terrified. Yeah, exactly. So obviously first thing I do is make sure the baby was okay, and she was absolutely fine.
Oh.
But then as the nurse is examining me and the midwife and asking what level of pain it is and what makes it better and what relieves it, and I just very quickly hear the words that I'm a black woman, and I'm aware of stories across the world. I mean, this isn't just us locals and normal people. I mean, Serena Williams and Beyonce have also been gone down to say that they've had issues in maternity care, and I heard the words that I think we all dread to hear is like, oh, you'll be fine, like you're a strong woman.
Wow.
You can handle this.
You're a strong woman. How do they, I mean, and what can that be based on if not upon your skin colour?
Or would they,
I mean, well, this is the heart of my question. How do I know they wouldn't say that to my wife? I don't think they would. Certainly they never did.
I don't think they would either.
No.
And I have no grounds. I don't know. There's no way of knowing that they wouldn't say that to a white woman.
No, you can know. but you can't prove it. You can't really prove it. I mean, you know, I'd probably get some messages now from perfectly good people, well-meaning people, saying, no, I'm white, and they said that to me as well. But it's a well-documented trope, isn't it? It's a well-known stereotype that black women are deemed as having tough skin and being able to tolerate pain. Do we know? I hope this isn't a stupid question. Do we know where that comes from? Do we know what?
I think it's probably from slavery.
Yeah.
I think it's probably from slavery and the things that were put through. It's also why it's kind of historical that young girls, young black girls, are seen to be older than they are.
Yeah.
Again, because of slavery, it kind of excuses them from all the atrocities that they did to young black girls.
A subconscious cultural legacy. If you can put up with that, you can put up with this. And if you're old enough to do that kind of work, then you're old enough to be treated in certain ways by the authorities or by society. What happened? What did you do? I mean, you clearly everything went okay, but in that moment, what can you do when you're feeling anything but strong? Of course,
that's the thing, and I think another trope that is put against black women is that we are angry. So I think in those instances, I always have to try and stay calm, because if I do allow myself to feel that anger and show it, then that's another issue.
You're proving the stereotype.
Then I'm proving the stereotype.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and this is all during COVID, so I didn't have my husband by my side to advocate for me.
Wow.
So I had to advocate for myself and just try and stay calm and say, you're right, I am a strong woman, but I do still feel pain.
Yes.
And this is intolerable, and I cannot cope. And I haven't been able to sleep, so I need you to help me to relieve this pain. I need you to be my healthcare advisor, yeah, assistant, midwife.
And it did.
Eventually it did. It's just a whole load of advocating for yourself, which is exhausting. It's another layer on top of it when you're a patient.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting anyone to get their violins out, Ravina, when I was describing how tough it is for the dad to advocate in those scenarios, but it's the right word to use, and it would have taken a huge burden from your shoulders had your husband been with you. Can I ask you a tricky question? Would you mind?
Given
your qualifications to answer it, given what you do for a living and what you experienced on the maternity ward, but these stereotypes are, I mean, they are quite likely also to be subconsciously indulged by black nurses about other black women, do you think?
Yes, I do think that. Which is it's hard. There are so many layers to it.
Yeah.
I think the only way around it, or to try and navigate it, is training. I think we have to be really open and honest about our own unconscious bias.
Yeah.
And call it out and train people to look differently, to change their perspective, and to look at themselves and how they judge people. It's snap judgments.
And yet, of course, there'll be a Daily Telegraph or a Daily Mail editorial being written as we speak about how dare you suggest that I suffer from unconscious bias, or how dare you suggest that I need unconscious bias training. All of the people that need it most are the people most adamant that they don't, either because they're quite comfortable with their innate prejudices or because they are too ignorant to see the problems that they cause.
Like you say, it's absolutely not just restricted to one race.
No.
All races are able to be unconsciously biased about anybody else, even people that look like themselves.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and it's an I'm glad that you thank you for answering my question so sincerely, because it is a problem that everybody should want to have fixed, and sometimes we need to be reminded of that. Rowena, thank you. 10:32 is the time. The questions continue. What happened to you is the most obvious one. How do you account for it? Why do you think it happened to you, your poor experiences in maternity services? And why are things in such an almighty mess? With the constant caveat even, that there are loads of brilliant people doing brilliant work in often very difficult circumstances right across the sector. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
A national investigation has concluded women and babies are being failed by NHS maternity services in England. The interim reports found there's a lack of kindness and compassion, as well as issues including racism and staff shortages. The number of asylum seekers being housed temporarily in hotels in the UK has fallen to the lowest level for 18 months. New Home Office figures show the total stood at just over 30,000 at the end of last year. And LBC has learned security alerts are being recorded at Britain's nuclear submarine base every 3 days. 10 times as many reports were flagged at Faslane last year compared with before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. LBC weather. Rain will move across Scotland into large parts of England and Wales, staying dry in the southeast of England, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10:36 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Some very moving stories coming in via texts and, of course, as you'd expect, on the phones as well, but also some explanations, and they're important as well. Peter in Leamington Spa describes compassion fatigue. Maternity staff just suffer with compassion fatigue. Until they deal with that, the NHS will continue to perpetuate the environment where those poor families suffer. And I need a little bit of help with something. I haven't put it in the correct spot yet. I'll find it in a minute. I've received a very rude message from somebody who is going to head into Idiot's Corner, but I need a little bit of help from you on how I should deal with it, because I can't deal with half of it without proving the other half of it, if you see what I mean. I'll share more shortly. Oh no, hang on, we have got it. It's here. So I've received a message that says, James, and there's a word here that I can't use. James, you are a precocious, condescending bleep. And there's no history here, so we can't click on it and find out what other little gems this character has shared with us in the past. But the problem I've got is that they obviously mean pretentious, not precocious. And yet, if I point out that you don't know what the words that you're using mean, then you could realistically describe me as condescending. I hope you would never consider me to be a bleep, but this person is too stupid to understand the insults that they're throwing at me. And when I point out that they're too stupid to understand the insults, so they've accidentally complimented me. Being precocious is generally considered to be a good thing. It means that you're ahead of your time in terms of talent. It's an odd thing to call a 54-year-old, but nevertheless, here we are. Apparently, I display all of the brilliance and genius that you would ordinarily only associate with a 55-year-old or a 56-year-old, such as my precociousness. But if I now point out how stupid this person is because they've mixed up the word precocious for the word pretentious, I sound a bit condescending, don't I? I just thought I'd share that with you so you get an insight into the burdens that I carry on your behalf every day on the programme. 10:38 is the time. Back to the phone in. David is in Nottingham. David, what made you pick up the phone?
Good morning, James.
Hello.
I'm picking up the phone as, and I'm not going to use the term harmed.
Okay.
I'm a dad from Nottingham who was part or is part of the Nottingham Maternity Inquiry.
Right.
Of a particular family group where we've had to significantly recurringly tell our stories about the individual harms that we've suffered. I've sat in front of Baroness Amos and presented arguments and data and facts as to where the maternity inquiry that she's been heading up, with support of some amazing families on the team.
Yeah.
We've been to Parliament to, again, kind of give the ground rules and the evidence of what this inquiry means and actually shout from the hills as to why the PI is the only way to answer your question, James. You know, how does this get solved?
Yes.
What does this report really mean? Use a term. We've got facts and distractions. So we've got facts of the racism side of the agenda in terms of where black mothers are perceived as being overly strong or aggressive.
Yeah.
We've got facts of negligence, which is in public domain, of what certain professionals have done in terms of harming mothers at the point of giving birth, and then the harm to children afterwards, which isn't manifested. But two things I really want to shout about is that, and I'm not saying that anybody is forgetting dads, but we are really forgotten sometimes. So if I just give you a snapshot of my journey, because I know everybody wants to talk.
No, you take all the partner, don't you take all the time you want, all right?
My partner at the time of pregnancy had recurring miscarriages, ectopic pregnancies, and other risks associated with pregnancy prior to actually giving birth, because that is why we'll call it. We phoned the hospital, explained the situation, high risk, and the response you get at the time, which I'm aware thousands of mothers to be have been given, oh, you're stressing too much, don't worry about it, it's normal, you don't need to come in. So when you're about to hit that joyous moment because you think you your son, your daughter is going to arrive and you're told that it's stillborn, quickly we're kind of we've been conditioned that, you know what, it's really sad, but it's something that happens.
Right.
But through the inquiry over the years,
this is the Ockenden, you're talking about the Ockenden review.
Yeah, okay,
just to be clear.
You learn that actually there's significant negligence that has occurred. I can't mention the name at the time due to what is occurring.
No, of course.
But the issue is systemic. And the
How did you process that discovery? And also, if you don't mind me asking, what gave you the energy to pursue this and not just to sign up for the traditional, oh, what a terrible thing has happened, it couldn't possibly have been avoided? So why did you not let it lie? I'm so sorry for your loss. And how did you process the discovery that it was something that was done to you, your family, rather than something that just happened?
If anger,
yeah.
Because when you look at where your family is at the point of that discovery, which is completely broken, which has impacted everybody, where you have a child in a mental health unit as an element of that particular issue, where you have another child that has to deal with that trauma, you're not just dealing with the trauma of your partner, you're not just dealing with the trauma of your family, that thread of pain, it affects everybody differently, but it extends right through that family. And then you hear the other stories, you know, there's a mother in our group that has a stoma because somebody made a mistake. You know, birth is supposed to be the most joyous thing. and the thing that actually keeps us going, and nobody's held accountable. And one of the things which our theme is, and I'm sorry if I offend anybody, is the term of dangerous people.
Yes.
So if you take Nottingham as a prime example of the NHS Trust over the last 15 to 20 years, and I call this academic genocide, proceeded over and reports which have recurringly said this place is unsafe. Safe, what is going on? There have been deaths that could have been avoided. So the government of not having a PI is protecting people, still not be sitting on a lot of the inquiries that are happening. And obviously,
just remind us, remind people listening what a PI is.
A public inquiry is ultimately what basically says, forcing you to give evidence and you need to be accountable for what happened.
Yeah.
There was a recent thing in Parliament talking about what needs to change in terms of infrastructure in the NHS to avoid these issues. If you don't take evidence from people that got it wrong, how can you change anything? And also the data we're looking at now is old data. We've moved on. So what we need to do, and why, and the only way to stop it, is to actually make people realise you could be prosecuted, go to jail for the level of negligence you have proceeded over. And that's why the revolving door will go round and round and round, because the people in certain high places who need to avoid being held to account is going to continue. Absolutely disgusting what's happened for decades.
So there needs to be more kind of consequence, really, and a public inquiry would deliver a much higher threshold for consequences than a mere investigation or a mere report. What did you learn, if anything, about the systemic problems that you describe? Because I presume that people don't start off bad or incompetent, but that's why we use the word systemic, that something happens systemically that reduces the level of care and concern that we would, turning up at a place like a hospital, and especially perhaps a maternity ward, that we would just expect. Have you learned anything in that space about how this has transpired?
Dangerous people protect dangerous people.
So dangerous people end up in positions, and then other people become dangerous by dint of protecting them because of a fear of institutional reputational harm.
Because you can be a consultant that gets bounced around the UK after causing harm.
Yeah, because of reputational harm, reputation protection being prioritised over patient protection. Which happens in all institutions. I mean, schools do it, not patients, but you know, they'll sacrifice a pupil to protect the reputation of the school. You don't sound, and I hope I'm wrong, but you don't sound very optimistic about what Baroness Amos is currently undertaking.
I don't need to sound optimistic because, as I mentioned, the team in Nottingham, we do data analysis, we've got midwives, we've got consultants, we've got people from the depth of SEN.
Yeah.
We've got an enormous team, which actually part of co-production, and I have to say, and apologies for saying this, Wes Streeting promised us face-to-face that families
don't
would be apologize. At the heart
don't
of the
apologize.
Review.
Don't apologise to anyone if he hasn't delivered on
these, these would be at the heart of review. Co-production would be used extensively because in the same way on the front line of social care, I have to listen to children. They should be listening to families who have been harmed. You don't need to bring in a consultant.
Baroness Amos says she's met with more than 400 families, who presumably have experiences akin to yours. Many of them.
Yes, but when you're not listening, and when you're giving tokenistic gestures of support, and when we're in meetings where people are breaking down and you haven't put the right mental health support in the team,
right,
and people are recurringly making mistakes, and when people are turning up to family meetings in 2025 and saying, actually, we now need to take a trauma-informed approach to the work, it beggars belief that you would dare even use that terminology for people that have suffered significant harm for decades.
Of course it does. I mean, we didn't dig into, or we didn't reflect much on your personal experience, more on the consequences than what actually happened, but you discovered that your child would have lived if you hadn't been told that there was no need to come into the hospital. Is that right?
St. James.
Yeah, 100%.
Let's deal with the dangerous people, and then things can change.
Well, I mean, I don't know what to say to you. You're very inspirational, and I wish you hadn't been put in a position where you had to learn those skills and those arts. I really do, but you do sound like you're an extraordinary advocate for people who may find themselves facing similar tragedies to what you and your family have been through.
Thanks.
No, thank you. It's 10:47.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
As much as it is great to give a spotlight and space for people with Tourette's syndrome, you've got to be so careful about what goes on the telly or the radio as a result of doing that, haven't you? I don't think you can therefore say that you are celebrating as a broadcast in whole that individual. So the BBC is going to have upset absolutely everybody.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your Advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern. So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It's 10:51. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where, as you will may be aware, I haven't reminded you yet today, but the fact that there is a by-election unfolding somewhere in this country means that we are all absolutely terrified of talking about anything overtly political. Probably more terrified than we need to be, but I ain't going to risk it. So our topic selection, our story selection, is informed partly by Ofcom regulations that forbid broadcasters from doing anything. Well, obviously they don't forbid broadcasters from doing anything, but that's the premise on which I operate. It's why we invented Mystery Hour. And it's why Mystery Hour always happens on Thursdays, because elections always happen on Thursdays. And that means that at least 1 hour of the programme is insulated, almost entirely insulated, from fears of accidental politicking. I have exaggerated slightly what the regulations are. Feel free to explore and research them for yourself. But I am comfortable, for once, being in the realms of, if not fake, then certainly exaggerated news. Because you know what they say, better safe than sorry. Hands up if you've ever had an Ofcom ruling against you on account of getting it wrong on an election day. Oh, it's just me then. My colleagues probably weren't even born when that happened. So sprightly and youthful is the current team. And it is also why we can probably find a little bit of room to have a little bit of fun with things like this.
Unhinged headline.
This is a doozy. Children do not belong in pubs or restaurants, so stop bringing them. Right, someone called Shauna Brown in, perhaps inevitably, either in the Daily Telegraph or on the Daily Telegraph website. So there you go. Children do not, but if you see a child in a pub, pick it up, take it outside and phone the authorities. Ditto restaurants. God forbid that families should go to restaurants for example, Sunday lunch. Because that is, I can't be bothered to read the articles that qualify for inclusion in Unhinged Headlines, because that's the whole point of the Unhinged Headlines. They're designed to make you read the article. And I say, no, I will not read the article, because I will not fall into the cult of the
Unhinged Headline.
It is 10:53. Back to the altogether more serious business of crisis in maternity care, failure in maternity care, and indubitably, racism in maternity care. Kate's in Westminster. Kate, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to, before I tell you my story, I just wanted to say to you that you, like, thank you. Thank you for everything you do as a broadcaster. And you're just a fair and impartial individual. Just a great, great man. Stop and it. You always speak for the underdog.
Thank you.
So thank
I try.
You.
I don't know that I always get it right, but that's very kind of you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. So I wanted to share with your listeners my story that happened to me just over a year ago. So I have a little boy and he's now a year and a half. And my maternity care, I'm mixed race and my partner is white. And leading up to baby being born, my maternity care as an outpatient was excellent. I really couldn't fault it. I'm in my early 40s, so I'm an old mummy. And I would like to say that, you know, having been a police officer, I know all too well about being accused of racism, etc. Yeah. And I've experienced it myself, as a police officer. So, you know, I would like to say that, you know, I am quite a fair, open-minded person.
Clearly.
But my maternity care leading up to baby being induced was brilliant. I got admitted into hospital at 38 weeks. Because baby was on the smaller side. And obviously, as an older mum, you're classed as high risk.
Of course.
So when I got taken into hospital, they got me started off. And then about 3 or 4 hours in, dad, my partner, was sent home because they said it was going to be quite a long process.
Right.
Then there happened to be a change of shift after they had given me my pessary. So now I was left on my own. The pain then started coming quite thick and fast, and it got to the point where I'd now been in the hospital a good number of hours and I hadn't been examined. I then, as the pain, you know, they hook you up to the monitor, so you can actually see that, you know, your contractions are coming, and at one point it got to like 98% and the pain was so excruciating. And I remember at that point, there was a lady opposite my bay who also had got admitted, but she'd come in after me, several hours after me.
Right.
And was behind curtains too. So at one point, we were both screaming behind our curtains.
Good Lord.
And she was a white young lady.
Right.
But all the staff just kept running to her, but not coming to see me, even though I had pressed my buzzer. And at one point, I actually came behind I shuffled off my bed and came behind the curtains to wait outside her curtains.
Wow.
To try and collar the staff for after they had dealt with her to see if they could maybe come and examine me and make sure that baby was okay. And as the staff came behind the curtains, I said to them that I'm in really a lot of pain. No one's come to see me for the best part of 4 hours. Can you please come and have a look now? And they were like, we'll send someone shortly. No one ever came. So I went back behind my curtains. And obviously I couldn't re-press my buzzer because my buzzer hadn't been cancelled at the nurse's bay. I then went...
So they'd sort of chalked you up as she's fine, she's making a fuss, but she's fine.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And they kept saying they were going to come and no one would come.
And they eventually never reset your buzzer, whereas the lady
buzzer
in the next bed, obviously every time they visited her, whatever they were doing, they were resetting her buzzer so she could press it again.
Right. And so what happened was an hour had passed. I then got off the bed again. And by this time, I'm in excruciating pain and I had to hold my belly up just to relieve the pressure. I then shuffled out to the nurse's bay and there was two nurses. One was messing about with the other one's hair, her ponytail, and I could see my buzzer behind them flashing. And I said to them, look, I'm in so much pain. Can you please, please come? Like, I'm now really, really worried. And they said, who's your midwife? And I told them. Yeah. And they said, okay, well, she's now gone off duty. We will send someone shortly. Again, no one came. So I went back to my...
You're still traumatised, aren't you?
I was honestly, the level of treatment that I could compare to the lady next door was far different.
And that shocked you?
It really shocked me because you hear all these stories on LBC and you do read a lot and you think, okay, like, well, I've never experienced that.
Yeah, of course.
But when you're in that vulnerable position where you think that your baby is in distress and you're in excruciating pain and no one's come in, you can compare the level of treatment. Eventually, it took me to have to call my partner and say, you need to get your butt to hospital now because no one's helping me. And he drove from his home in Surrey and he parked up, paid for the meter, got to the ward, and he opened the curtains. And by this time, I was bent over the bed screaming, please just get someone. And he then went straight to the nurse's bay, and I could hear him shouting, you lot in here now, because he was just like, he's a typical big burly builder.
Yeah.
And they came running, and I don't know if, and my heart.
To this day, yeah.
And my heart tells me they came running and thinking they were going to be dealing with a white patient, and it was me. Because it was the same women who were messing about with each other's hair at the nurse's station that came.
Good Lord.
And then, obviously, by this time, I could feel a lot of pressure. So they tried to stick me in a wheelchair, but I couldn't sit down because I could feel baby's head.
Yeah.
And by the time I got wheeled off to the actual deliverance suite, I don't know what happened because it was like I had an out-of-body experience. And after that, it was just, baby was born, but he was born with, like, the cord wrapped around his neck. So had I not called my partner when I did, things would have been far different. And
how terrifying.
Yeah. When women say that they get treated far different when you happen to be brown and black, it is very, very true.
And you had a healthy skepticism about that previously.
I because I've, you know, I'm a level-headed woman.